Welcome, Walden Leverage.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being on the Technocry Live.
My pleasure.
We've met casually, but other than that, we really haven't met until now.
We met in a parking lot.
We met in the parking lot
really
half an hour
scary,
ago.
Really scary, but yeah, exactly.
Laura and I were chatting about doing a parking lot show, so we thought we'd get an early start.
Yep,
yeah.
Absolutely.
So thanks so much for coming on.
You're welcome.
So you're the CEO of Tech Software.
That's the rumor.
Okay.
I am indeed.
Yes, great. That's a really, I can't wait to talk to you all about what you guys do and the services you provide, but I just want to do a little bit of news first.
Yep.
This is worth an honorable mention. Microsoft Ion, I mentioned this in the previous one, but I want to say it again because this is super important. Not a lot of people understand why this is important, but this is the first major player backing a Web 3.0 infrastructure. It's an authentication infrastructure that works on a Bitcoin-like blockchain. So it's peer-to-peer, it's completely distributed, nobody's controlling it, and more importantly, nobody can pull you off of it and censor it. So W3C is actually working on a standard for it, and Microsoft Ion is just one implementation of that standard. So this is not a Microsoft baby, this is actually bigger than that. So I just wanted to let you know, check it out, it's worth checking out. If you're into blockchain, if you're into free speech or Microsoft or Linux or open source or anything, this is right up your alley. This is going to the Facebooks of the world are not really participating, which should tell you something right there. So there's a quick thing on Red Hat 8, and we had talked about this in my user groups meeting, so I thought I'd pass it along. I don't know if I mentioned this in the last one. I don't think I did. So Red Hat 8 was trying to implement containerization on their entire operating system for years, and they were doing it with Docker. And then Red Hat 8 comes out, and we find out that it's actually Podman, not Docker, that they're using for containerization. It looks like it's a fork, so it's fully feature complete. So I don't know, Red Hat didn't get along with some of the Docker guys, or they just wanted to make a couple of key distinctions technically. It looks like it's either a fork or a really good work-alike. I have my doubts about work-alike, so I still haven't confirmed that. If anybody has any details about that, feel free to chime in the comments with a story or a link or something. A lot of even the Linux guys are kind of scratching their head like, okay, this doesn't seem like a bad decision, but we're not sure why they made it. I'm sure they went into it in detail in the Boston Summit, so if anyone was at the Boston Summit, let us know. There was something interesting in the news. Apparently, the second case of a passed-out drunk at the wheel of a Tesla has hit the news. So
it's better than hitting the wall, I suppose.
So I just, you know, it's funny because there's a lot of like fake outrage about this. I think it's a great thing. I know that technically they don't want to be in the legal position where the car is fully responsible, because of course then the first accident will be a $1 billion lawsuit. But at the same time, you know, if a drunk is determined to drive home, isn't it better they just fall asleep at the wheel and let the car do it? Because it's probably a better driver than their drunk self. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fake outrage. I was just wondering if you guys agreed with that. So, and I mentioned a browser last time after the cert kerfuffle on Firefox and the Mozilla code base, where all their add-ons broke at the same time on a Sunday, which of course is a huge deal if you're a developer and you're using those add-ons to, I don't know, do work. So the browser that I was talking about was the Brave browser. It's actually based on Chrome, but it looks like it's a fork. So if you're looking for another browser that doesn't suck, that's not Chrome, that's not Firefox, the Brave browser looks pretty good. All right. Steve, you also had mentioned something about that chip company. Apparently, there was an escalation in the trade war. I mentioned it in a previous episode, but it was Huawei, was it?
Yeah, so America's at a trade war with Huawei right now. I have the webcam on, so it's not as jarring. Huawei is a cell phone and computer manufacturer based out of China. Mm-hmm. And as you know, China, with the communist government, everything kind of needs to go through it. So there was speculation in America that that Huawei was getting, like, there's a breach of security and all our stuff, information is going back to the Chinese government.
Mm-hmm.
And the trade war, Trump's just like, no, He's like, he's not having that. So he put a blacklist on any American company doing business with Huawei, among other corporations.
Okay.
So that means they can't work with Microsoft to get Windows, Intel or NVIDIA for PC components.
They can't import either.
No, they can't work with Google.
That's the difference. Now I understand what you're
talking
about.
They can't work with Google for the license to Android.
Okay.
And that's effectively crippling them. But in turn, China basically said to the U.S., like, all right, listen, then we're just not going to let Apple products in here, which means Apple can't use the factories in China, which I don't think is going to be as devastating because Apple could go to Ireland. But
Oh, wow. So, yeah.
My stocks are very happy.
It just went hot. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's bonk. I can't believe I missed it. So this is the consequence for not using news feeds like the TV because I just won't do it. I don't trust them. Once in a while, I'll miss a big story like that. But, okay. Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome.
So that was the news. I just wanted to get it out there and talk about what's going on. So back to tech software. So anything you'd comment about the ingeniousness of those news items?
I'm just thinking that what we're really saying here is you can embargo all the grain you want and piss off all the farmers in the middle of the country, and nobody seems to care, which is really sad. I'm not saying it's a good thing.
Obviously.
But you fuck with my iPhone, and now it's gotten real.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an interesting...
Yeah, totally.
You know, what is really important isn't really what's important.
I mean, all right, look, I know Apple's important to a lot of businesses because they standardize on... Particularly OS X is important because it's a way to get the strengths of Unix and the ease of, like, a Microsoft-y kind of operating system, you know.
Yeah, I don't understand Mac, but yeah.
Yeah, it's... I can tell you. So I think I figured out the difference between the philosophies of Apple and Microsoft because I used to be a professional Mac tech,
okay.
not a Mac tech, a server Mac guy, an Apple server guy.
Right. Yeah. When they had Apple servers
for a couple of years, someone hired me and convinced me to switch over from Linux to that.
Okay.
And I did it, and so I got like a really good look at underneath and how it works. So I think. The underneath is just like anything else. It's just like Linux or Unix or Windows. It's complicated. There's lots of choices. There's lots of decisions and tuning and stuff. But on the top, Microsoft, and the key to this is actually the Microsoft Sync telematics unit in my 2014 Ford, which is a Sync 1.
Okay.
And it's just all these twisting little passages of decision making. And so you can really dive down, you know, menu to menu to menu to menu to menu to menu and get tune exactly the behavior you want out of it. That's why the normal consumer hates Sync 1. But that's why I love it. I actually avoided it for years, and I found now that I use it, I find it's not that bad.
I've been a Windows guy since birth, basically. You know, so not literally, obviously, but it makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have conversations with people, and I'm like, how can you not understand Windows? It's so obvious. It does this. It all makes sense. And you know, people will say, no, well, then you're just weird and gifted and whatever. And I thought it was just always so obvious. And then about 2 years ago, I went and said, you know, that Mac Mini or whatever the heck of the MacBook Air is so, as an engineering thing, so slick, so nice, so clean. I want that. I tried to understand OS X.
Right.
Really, I did for a couple months, and it was really an awakening of, because now I'm in that other boat going, how I don't understand OS X. And, you know, and all my Mac friends are going, how can you not understand this? It's so simple. It's so easy.
I think it's the difference between an engineer's mindset and a magician's mindset.
Yeah, and that's what I don't like about OS X, both personally and professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And you were kind of alluding to it with all the choices that Microsoft gives you. Apple's view of the world is, trust us, we'll make it work.
Right. Right.
And all you need to do is hit this button. All you need to do is put your files here somewhere. Don't worry, they're there somewhere. Where? Where are they? I want to back them up. I want to understand it.
It's kind of an institutionalized cargo cult. You know?
Yeah.
And because, like, everything you need to do in Apple, you can do with 20 motions. But if you use, you know, with the one button mouse and you just click. If you do it their way.
Right.
And that's actually what most people want. But the trick is, all of those clever little menus and side things, yeah, there's two avenues to them in the OS X world that will make it as flexible as the Microsoft world. I want to do this. Oh, there's a submenu. Oh, I want to do this. Oh, there's a submenu.
Yeah.
Right? So you have to superimpose that tree in there. And what you do is you go, okay, Alt, click. Shift, click.
Yeah.
You know, Control L, you know, or the four squiggle button. And so all those control sequences turn this very, very simple. That's why I compared it to a magician, because it's still the same motion, but, you know, in one it vanishes, you know? And, like, nobody knows why that happened.
Right.
So, and the engineer's like, I want it all laid out in front of me.
Right.
What are all the options? What time does this take?
If I put my end user cap on, that's wonderful. You know, that's why I have an iPhone. Not an Android.
Right.
I just want to hit
a button. We all have customers
and
eventually.
Have it work. You know. But as that IT guy, it's like, no, I need to understand the details. Not even as the geek, but as the, I don't trust you.
Yeah.
I want my own backups. I want to understand how. I don't care how the operating system's working. I don't care what your memory management models are. Where is my data? And it needs to be here. And it needs to be here. And it needs to be here, and I probably want a copy over here.
Right.
And that's not easy to do in the Mac world.
Right.
It's totally possible. I mean, it's a fully capable underlying operating system. No argument.
Usually the trick, if you're a guru and you're helping a novice, is you just put it in the background. And then you put a thing that they click on just like everything else, and it does the thing that they want.
Right.
And then it, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Oh, it worked. Thank you. You're welcome. Bye.
It's just years of enterprise, and it's why I also don't like it in the enterprise, is it hides so much. It's just, you want that layer of control, that layer of not trusting the operating system.
You didn't think it was going to go there, did you?
Where?
Between Apple and Microsoft and comparing those two.
No, I have no preconceived notions where this is going today.
So just if you don't know, this show is completely not scripted. We have a lot of ideas. We have an idea tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I even warned the guests ahead of time. You know, if you see me scribbling, it might be because I'm not sure where it's going and I want to make sure we don't dead end.
Yep.
But, like, I don't know. We're just going
to
talk about whatever.
You might be playing tic-tac-toe.
I'm coloring. I'm doing stick figure war. I have a stick figure cartoon up on the channel, so I warned you. You know.
Whatever works, I'm good with it.
Cool. So how did you get? I'm going to give you the question that everyone is mad. One guy is mad. Lee, I'll say Lee Wilbur is mad because I didn't give him this question.
Okay.
And poor guy. And he's right. It is a great question.
Yep.
How did you get into tech? How did you get into computers?
Oh Christ! How far back you want me to go?
You don't have to incriminate yourself.
The totally geeky answer. I blame my dad. Well, it is my dad's fault. I don't just blame him.
Right.
He's a journalism major by trade.
Mm-hmm.
Got a journalism degree. Left journalism or left college. Did some various stuff in the garment industry, et cetera, but eventually ended up, probably late 70s, early 80s, on IBM hardware. IBM mid-range hardware, System 34.
Okay, thanks, man. I didn't even start to fail with that yet. All right, thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
And so,
a team of Oompa Loompas is opening the wine.
Was it Valerie, the one that turned purple, whoever it was?
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway. And so
doing something I hate the most.
So he was in that world, and I just had a natural geeky tendency to like stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I can remember listening to tapes, cassette tapes, good old, you know, not quite 8-track, not that old, but cassette tapes on the RPG-2 programming language. And this was back when you had literal sheets of paper that you would write your opcodes into, and like old school programming. And I was probably 10. And this is my idea of fun.
And you would write it out first before you even typed it in?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, and
is it that you didn't have a computer at the time to type it into, or you just wanted to write it first? That's the way your
IBM
brain works.
IBM actually created different sheets of paper, because RPG is a columnar language, but not like YAML where it's white spacey, but you know, this has to be in column 6, this has to be in column 15, this has to be in column 22.
Python,
And so you had that, you literally had sheets of paper, probably from the early days, where programmer A wrote it and person B keyed it in. It had evolved a little bit, but you still wrote it out on sheets and pads of paper. So, so you know, it's his fault that I started, and then went to, you know, did summer camp at computer camps and things like that.
Right.
Went off to college.
So you didn't have a Mini at this point yet at home?
No. My never had one at home. As far as like a, you know, an IBM hardware at home. My first home machine was a Trash 80 Model 3.
Okay.
And Z80 assembler language and that kind of stuff.
Right.
But, you know, so then I...
Go ahead.
Okay, so then I went off to college and with the idea that I would actually be an aerospace engineer.
Oh, okay.
And went to Clarkson. Was
it because of Grumman was...
No, not. I grew up in Manhasset. I mean, obviously, I grew up on Long Island, but really...
Yeah, we've had a couple Grumman of people on the show that like Grumman was like, oh, it's Grumman, I want to work there.
Not at all. Not at all. My father, my grandfather was aerospace and a big influence for me. So that probably came from that side. But... you know, went off to college a year early, actually. I was, you know, blew off my senior year of high school and went to Clarkson. They still have a program called the Clarkson School that is people blowing off their senior year of high school and going to college instead.
That's spectacular.
And it's, yeah, it is.
That's the
I
right
love
way
it.
To do
it's
it.
A wonderful,
I like college so much
it's
better
a wonderful
than high school.
Thing. And it's great because you come back and the high school kids are like, how could you have left? Man, the parties we had, you missed all these great parties. And you're going, you haven't seen anything yet. Wait until you get to college.
You fools.
Yeah, went off, thought I was going to do aerospace. Clarkson School is nice because, and maybe less so now, I don't know, but at the time, they very much allowed success.
Thanks,
we have an open bottle of wine.
I got that one open.
Why did you bother? Oh, no, there is a little
there's
bit.
There's a little bit in there, yeah.
Coffee?
Sure,
why not?
I'll top me off. Thanks, man.
So, you know, it's so funny watching it because it's that time delay a little bit.
Right.
So, Clarkson School's cool because they kind of let you do anything you want.
Right. Thanks, man.
Both educationally and otherwise, and we'll talk about the other as well, but I was taking, you know, Calc 1, typical freshman class.
Right.
And I was taking EE443,
how did you even...
silicon, you know, the finer parts of electron migration to silicon.
So you were already mentally in Diffie Q then, if you were in that class.
Diffie Q was one of my downfalls, but yes.
Yeah. I mean, mentally, you must have been there, because it's a prereq for that class. You couldn't possibly.
Yeah, but we could just ignore the prereqs, because we were in Clarkson School. We could do whatever we wanted.
Oh, that's great.
So it was
did
really
did you fail
cool.
the class, or did you pass it?
No, I think I'd actually... No, thanks.
No.
I take my coffee the way I take my women, black and bitter.
Anger.
Exactly. And my wife's at home going, what did you say? She's neither black nor bitter, so, you know.
Right,
light and sweet, honey. That's what I meant. Yeah. So, yeah, we could blow off the prereqs. But, so, I went off.
The joys of the metal life.
Did that, yeah. And that was fine.
Right.
Sophomore year, I actually transferred over to WPI because they had a cool aerospace program, and then I met Thermodynamics.
Ah.
Me and Thermodynamics don't get along.
Not mixy things.
And you really need to understand Thermodynamics to be an aerospace engineer.
Yeah.
I have a very pragmatic streak. I, you know, it has to make sense.
Right.
And then I can understand it, and I can internalize it, and I can do it.
Right.
And Thermo's got questions like, you build a 300-story building and you put one air conditioner on the roof. What is the thermal load of? And I'm looking at this going, no, you don't build a 300-story building and you'd be an asshole to put one air conditioner on the roof. This is a dumb question. I can't answer it. You know, and that's just
ask me later. I did the math on the Atlantic Tunnel. If we really did shut all the planes down, ask me about the math on that.
Nice.
The turbine is epic.
Yeah. So I mean, I can do the math. I could, but it just I can't deal with it.
Yeah.
So while at WPI, I actually, you know, again in that, oh, I'm at school, let me just take some random ass classes. WPI had a clean lab. I've done silicon wafer etching. I've done in college, you know, so I kind of migrated over to the computer science side of the world.
Right.
Took a year off. I mentioned my dad, who at this point had started Tech Software as a consulting company in the IBM mid-range.
So wait, all Tech Software is a family business?
Tech Software is a family business.
Nice, nice. Was it weird working with your dad or for your dad? Or was your dad working for you? Or?
No. No. And
he's yelling at the internet right now.
Thankfully, dad is now chasing white balls and, you know, playing golf and drowning worms and fishing and not working.
Yes.
So I took a year off after WPI and went into, working for my dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, IBM mid-range, it's a business computing machine. It's got a database built in. It's, you know, it's real world database systems.
Right.
And then when I had met Alyssa, my wife, in Clarkson School, so first year of college. She was still at Clarkson. She did her whole career at Clarkson. I went off to WPI, then took a year off, then went back to Clarkson. And now, again, that pragmatic streak, I'm sitting in comp sci classes, and they're going, your homework is to go home and write a database engine on your own, and it will have these three fields. I'm going, you're an idiot. Go buy that database, put this in, build some physical files, build some logical files, you can write some RPG programs, put a screen on front of it, you'll be done in an hour. What do you mean write a database engine in Pascal?
You just bring
Why would I do this?
You just bring a text file with the tables in it from MySQL.
Yeah.
Or whatever the equivalent was.
Right, but that would be the equivalent today.
Right,
you know,
SQL existed, not MySQL though.
needless to say, me and college no get along.
Yeah.
I don't have a degree.
I'm going to tell you a secret about me. So, and if anything, I'm surprised we're even getting along so well right now because we're pretty alike. And, you know, sometimes people are like, they don't get along, but I think maybe we're doing okay here because I, almost everything, all the big accomplishments in my life have been completely outside of the system. So, and it's really weird when I see people support the system by default, and they don't. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't get it.
Yep.
I hear you. You know,
it's a dangerous thing, especially when you fight
the
educational
system. I have to stop myself.
Yeah,
I don't want to. I realize that not everything's broken. Not everything's bad.
A lot of stuff is broken.
Yeah.
But, no, not everything.
Go
is broken.
And.
Much as, like, you know, parts of me hate the educational system, the structured educational system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, very lucky because Tech Software is a family business.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had a resume. I've never applied for a job. I've never done an interview.
Admirable qualities.
I get around the fact that I don't have a degree by not needing to have a degree.
Right.
You know, if you're going to go out and get a job in the real world,
right,
you have to have a degree.
Right.
The degree might be freaking useless.
Yep.
But you have to have a degree. It's that minimum barrier to entry. If you don't have it,
confirmed.
You are screwed.
Confirmed. Yeah, I have an associate's. That's how I got. I got a high school diploma. It wasn't easy.
Yep.
It got easy once some things changed. But then, I got an associate's degree. And actually, I was working on my bachelor's, and I got poached. A .com found me and said, "You can do this work. We need you." I said no, and they said, "We'll pay you this." And I said yes.
That's
and bye, college.
That's the beauty of, especially IT. That's the beauty of the IT environment. Is it's really about what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about what's your formal training, at least in what you're doing, what I'm doing. Yes, if I'm going to write a blockchain system, not use a blockchain system, but if I'm going to write a blockchain system,
arguably
I better have a doctorate in mathematics, and I better, you know,
right.
If I'm going to be a developer, I'm not a developer, I'm going to be an architect on SQL Server. I better understand relational algebra. I bet, you know, so there are certain people that you really need.
Right.
But the analogy I use often is the auto mechanic. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a few people in Detroit that really have to understand the finer points of why you make an engine the size you make it, and you know,
right.
And then there's a whole lot of people that need to be able to fix an engine,
mm-hmm.
The mechanics.
Right.
Those are the programmers. The programmers, the developers, are the mechanics.
Right.
And we've got a lot of people in school.
It was a good example you brought up, because you know when you're dealing with anything where your creation is going to get away from you, and it's mm-hmm. not going to be easily serviceable. Whether it's a satellite in space, whether it's a car on the road, you know, a little more easy than that case.
Right.
A bridge in service,
mm-hmm.
you know, usually that's the worst case. Like if you're an engineer and you screw up and you've built a bridge, people
right.
die.
Yep.
For sure, you know.
Yep.
Once in a while they'll catch it and they'll shut the bridge down before it goes wrong, but not always.
Or not. Was it Tacoma Narrows Bridge that decided to just start doing the oscillation on the sympathetic frequency that came down the path
and actually I think that one wasn't even a blame one because it had never happened before, so everyone was like
no one knew to check what's the sympathetic frequency of the channel that you're building a bridge over, because it's 500 feet wide or 1,000 feet wide or whatever.
Right. Yeah, but it's interesting the examples you pick. So it definitely shows me that you know, yes, some things require a higher level. And it's the difference between doing a bottom-up design where every little piece has to be carefully tested and vetted and based in some kind of, and based in solid mathematics and solid either material science or math science or whatever mm-hmm. science you need to versus kind of like a top-down programming where it's just kind of like, all right, let's throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. Okay, these pieces that stuck, we'll put them together and throw that at the wall.
Right. And you bring up the satellite in space or, you know, say the Martian rover or whatever. I kind of look at it, there are sort of three, probably more, but off the cuff, three levels that you've got the person that's the thing that's being physically manufactured, whether it's the car or the coffee cup or... An error in those are damn hard to fix because mm-hmm. it's out the door. You know, if you got the engine wrong, fine, you can
right.
replace the engine, but you physically have to go replace the engine everywhere.
Right.
You've got the next level of software, but on-prem software.
Mm-hmm.
Windows, Linux, you know, whatever, Microsoft Word, I don't care what. You can fix it easily. There's not a physical manifestation of it, but there are thousands and thousands and millions and millions and millions of copies.
Mm-hmm.
You can't fix it.
Right.
And then I get the really, really lucky one that has software as a service. There's a bug? Okay, I'll fix it on that server and that server and that server because we have redundancy, and it's fixed everywhere.
Because if you don't...
Because those are the only copies of that software.
It's interesting. You're almost the closest analogy is you guys are almost an insurance company, right? Because if the software's really solid, you're just writing a liability policy that never gets used. But, you know, of course, we know that's not how it really works.
For what I pay for insurance, I damn well want to use it sometimes.
There's always a better user out there, right?
Yeah,
better fictitiously.
In the SaaS world, it gives us the freedom to iterate more quickly.
Okay.
Because, yes, we're worried about reliability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like the second thing we worry about after security.
Mm-hmm.
But if we get it wrong, and we do, we're humans.
Mm-hmm.
We can fix it immediately, and everybody gets that benefit immediately. If mm-hmm. it was deployed software, it was Microsoft Word that was broken,
and if you
we
fix
can
it
still
right,
fix the source code, but if, not if everyone's
you,
upgraded.
And if you fix it right, it might even be fixed forever. It might even be fixed for other people.
In a software as a service world, it is fixed for everybody simultaneously because we're the ones that are actually running the software.
Right.
You know, you've just got a web browser at the other end of a very big pipe.
And yeah, and in a proprietary software world, you may even send something back up to the vendor and they fix it on all their operating systems if it's a
vendor OS bug. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And in the open source world, you can release the code and you just fixed it for everybody. You fixed your own personal problem and you solve the problems of the world. You fix the world.
We solve the problem. Problems of the world. I don't know if I'd go that far, but
a problem.
We can hope.
We can only narrow it down to a few problems, and we can just write the code, and we'd be done.
Give us a week, we'll solve all the problems. Yeah.
Just get that button, the Jetsons, you know, boop, okay, I'm going home.
I just was it Rosie, the one that just vacuumed? I mean, I've got a Roomba, but it's still not the same as Rosie.
Yeah, it's just the cat can't really ride on her. You know, that's the only difference.
On Rosie.
Yeah, on Rosie, yeah.
Yes.
So you guys are doing software as a service.
Yep.
You're doing, what was it again? You're doing medical data.
So what is the software that we do?
Is it all about compliance or?
It started there. There are what we affectionately refer to as creative uses of our software.
Right.
But really it is about, actually even the creative uses, it's about compliance. So we've got a product called IRB Manager. It's the name of the software.
Mm-hmm.
The IRB there is an institutional review board. Mm-hmm. And what those are, they're the committee, they're the organization that looks at research and says, at the end of the day, can you do it or not?
Right.
But what they're really doing is looking at the ethics behind it and everything else. Does the patient understand what they're doing? You know, mm-hmm. are they aware of what the risks are? Are they, you know, have you told them, oh, just take this drug and you'll be cured of all your ills, you know, or have you really said, you know, it really sucks, but you're a stage 4 cancer patient, and we're going to do some tests on you,
mm-hmm.
but you're going to be dead in a year anyway. These tests are about the next generation of patients, or the ones after that, because you're a stage 4 cancer patient.
Now,
your ship
course,
has sailed.
There is always possible that if it's an experimental drug, that there's that die roll, that this will be the one that actually works. And they'll somehow magically be...
And that's a very...
I use magic, not literally,
but
damn near magically.
One of the things that is that they would look at is, look, anyone's going to believe what they want to believe.
Right.
The likelihood that any cancer trial, I'm going to go, oh, I'm cured of cancer. Look, they came up with a polio vaccine. They could come up with
a superhero.
Right. But the problem is when you're...
I can run really fast.
When you're sick person, when you've gone through everything else and mm-hmm. you're willing
or
to
you're
believe
Or you can become a
anything,
meth dealer.
Right? You're willing to believe.
Sorry, keep going.
Yeah, you're willing to believe anything at that point. So
right.
You know, those are the concerns of the Institutional Review Board. Are you... telling people what's going on, are they aware of what the research is? And there's some good regulatory requirements in that. There's some good background history on you know, trials that have happened over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got this need to do compliance, to do the human research oversight. And that's where we started. That was the IRB.
Okay.
Then the reality is the same exact thing happens for animal research.
What, all right, so is this just like another stupid bureaucracy, you know, the IRB?
The researcher would tell you that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the researcher would also tell you everything they're doing is 100% safe and they're just gathering data.
You know, it's funny. Every scientist I've ever met is perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
Just ask them, they'll tell you.
We've never had any bad science. You know. Maybe those evil people in Germany did bad things years ago.
Yeah.
But never in the United States.
It's so vague. I can't imagine what evil people you're talking about.
We have, you know, say in the late 30s, early 40s.
Oh, okay.
You know,
those all right,
people.
Thanks for narrowing it down.
But in the United States, we would never have done anything like that.
Yeah,
We wouldn't have, injected a bunch of black people in the South with syphilis and then neglected to tell them when there was a standard
No, that's crazy.
That wouldn't happen. You know, so
there, I trust government.
History is replete with examples of...
Draconis. Sorry.
Bad research.
Oh, you watched it? Okay.
Bad researcher.
I hope that wasn't a spoiler.
one week, what's the difference?
Yeah.
Careful.
Didn't put details, so it's okay.
So yeah, there's all sorts of things. So is it a bureaucracy? It can be.
Yeah.
And there's one of the things is called an informed consent. The thing mm-hmm. that the subject is. Well, A, people say informed consent is not a form, it is a process. Has the subject been informed and consented?
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, the informed consent is the document that they sign.
So the IRB is almost like a custody process on the consent from the patient to make sure that they understand what they're getting
the consent
into.
Consent and everything that came before it. You know,
because
if it's not scientifically sound...
Mm-hmm.
Then how can any risk be worth it?
Right.
Because it's not scientifically sound in the first place. If it's not...
So you're saying that we shouldn't do genetic research is top-down every time?
No.
Yeah, that seems a little unethical, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why it's important to understand the difference between like an engineering bottom-up kind of model and a top-down model, or a hybrid where it's a little of both.
Yeah, I mean, there are all sorts of different things that all sorts of different research models, we think research. We're sitting here. Probably the people that are watching are thinking research. Sure, you know, like the cure for cancer,
mm-hmm.
or the next artificial heart,
mm-hmm.
or even the next Viagra, whatever it might be. Yeah, that's research.
Right.
But so is somebody getting a doctorate, or for that matter, a master's or a bachelor's in education,
mm-hmm.
and they want to go sit in the back of a classroom and they want to watch the interaction between students and teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Is that risky research? No, unless they're an axe murderer. But it's not risky research, but it's research. That
right.
is research on human subjects. That has to go through the same process. Is it as stringent? Is it as, you know, do they look at it as much? No, but it has to go through that process.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it's a compliance engine for that. The same thing happens with animals. The same thing happens with radiation testing. The same thing happens with bench work.
Mm-hmm.
But so it started as the IRB is the human subject, and it's just morphed into compliance.
Right.
We even kind of eat our own dog food. The tools that we use as we put new releases into production,
mm-hmm.
I have to fill out an electronic form in IRB Manager saying what it is I'm putting into production. I have to submit that form. Somebody else has to sign off on that form before
good.
I can put the code.
So
we're using
your
own product to control the release. I mean, that has nothing to do with human subject research or research of any kind.
Right.
But it's a process. Really, at this point, it's a process engine. You fill out a form, you check off some boxes, everybody looks at it, they've signed off on it, everybody's happy.
So I assume is the custody, you depend on the database for custody? Do you use encrypted signatures at all for custody to verify it?
Depend on the database.
Depends on the database,
Yeah.
All right, and so you guys are doing de-identifying of human data also? Or
we really don't get the data itself. We're up at the definitional level. I would like to stick a needle in 50 kids, half of them are female,
right.
25% of them have to be black, and at least 8% of them are Hispanic.
So the server, server full of
protected health information.
Two gigabyte DNA files isn't really your purview.
Nowhere near us.
Okay,
yep.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But what you're doing with that, one of the questions the IRB would want to know, mm-hmm. where are you going to store that? And how are you going to keep it secure?
Right.
And so they want to know that what you're doing is
okay. We do on-site audits and stuff like that for this?
This
is a pre-flight check.
Yeah, we're the compliance. We're the software that the compliance team is using. We're not doing it ourselves.
So when the swarm of guys in yellow uniforms comes in with their handheld gadgets going
right.
and you have to answer yes or no, they may be running your software in some cases.
Yeah. So I mean, our customers are the hospitals, the universities, the medical.
They don't wear yellow full uniforms. I just made that up. I was thinking Monsters Inc. Continue.
I was thinking white. You know, you were saying yellow form. I'm thinking white uniforms from. whichever Mission Impossible that was, where he tells Max/Maxine that they're you remember the Mission Impossible? Have you not seen Mission Impossible?
I saw one and I didn't watch two because I was like, oh, it's going to be a cheesy sequel. And then I got married and had kids and was busy and I haven't seen any of them.
Now I just get better.
I watched a review saying how amazing this, apparently the stunt work is like groundbreaking in every single one, and
Cruise does a lot of his own stunt work.
I just blew it, you know.
There's
by not watching them. So yes, now I have
to go back and watch
Mission Impossible.
there's a great / horrible video of Cruise doing a jump from one building to another. Obviously, all wired in. He's not free jumping, but where he hits the side of the other building, and they've got the video close up where his ankle goes,
and he
literally broke his ankle on that jump, and hops up, and runs for a few feet.
Wow!
So I mean, he's a nut. He is
crazy,
and he looks in Top Gun.
You may know this also, but I actually saw a video on hit that series and the stunt work on it. So I actually didn't watch the shows. I just watched a video on the stunt work.
Yeah, he does a lot of his own stunt
work. And apparently he wrote his own insurance policy for that movie because they couldn't get anyone to insure an A-list actor running on the side of a building in United Arab Emirates or wherever it was.
So how the heck do you write your own policy?
Well, he sat down and worked out. He made it happen. He sat down with another insurance. They had an insurance company. And let me rephrase that. An actor fired an insurance company and spearheaded getting another one
that would actually
do the work.
Sure, I can believe that.
I mean, it's crazy. You know, like, he gave them a criteria and they did the work.
Yep.
But
yep.
Wow. I mean, like, you know, that's dedication. That's like, I really want to do this stunt. I will sit through hours of boring phone calls so I could do this stunt.
Yep. I don't know if he... I think he is an EP on his stuff. I'm not sure. But
yeah.
I mean, he certainly is heavily involved.
Yeah.
And worth watching the videos. Yeah.
Right. So I used to be a fan of the old show, too. And I really like the first one and I will watch them. So next time someone brings up, when you come back around again,
there you go.
And you come on the show, we'll be able to talk about it.
Yeah.
What the heck were you talking about?
Auditors.
Auditors.
The men in the yellow / white coats. So,
thank you.
Yeah, so the auditors, we had one in a customer yesterday. You know, so the auditors will come in and look at our customers' process and our customers' data, and it really is a process. Are you following your process? Do you have a process?
Mm-hmm.
And are you following your process?
Right.
Those are the two. And your process can be good or not good. It almost is secondary as long as you have a freaking process.
Right.
Where you get into trouble is when you don't have a process.
And right.
You can't say, this is how we do it, and we do it the same every time.
Right.
Because then you're winging it. And that's true of research compliance,
mm-hmm.
but that's true of infrastructure management in IT.
Mm-hmm.
That's true of backups. That's true of flight. That's
and
true
there's
of,
nothing,
you know,
and by the way, there's nothing wrong.
Process
there's nothing wrong with winging it when you're trying to figure out how it works.
That's different. That's development.
But once you've figured out how it works, that's when you stop winging it,
right.
And that's when you go.
Yep.
And sometimes businesses don't have time to do that. They don't have time to stop to sit there and figure out the not winging it process. And they're like, we got to go on this now. We got 3 months. We got a deadline.
Yep.
And I guess that would be where they would call you guys and say, help.
Well, in our case with compliance software.
Or would you just
software,
pass them along to someone else?
No, we're not going to consult on it. We're purely
right.
a software as a service.
Does that happen to customers coming to you and say, help us, we need to comply, and then you pass them along to someone
else? Yeah, we certainly have had customers that have called us shortly after the FDA has left and said,
right.
We need some compliance software and we need it now.
Yeah.
And the software is easy. You know, it's like,
right.
Okay, I hit a couple buttons, I spin up a new database, I give you a username and a password, you're done. It's setting it up. It's going, then, what is your process? Because we can't tell you what your process is, because
mm-hmm.
I don't know what your process is. You're Hospital X. You tell me.
Do you mind if I throw a fly in your ointment? So,
no.
So I don't know if you didn't know this
Keep
about me.
Keep your hands off my ointment.
sorry. Cover the camera. Can you black us out for a minute? No, just kidding. It's a joke.
Just pixelate it a little, Steve.
It's an inappropriate joke. Cards Against Humanity is my defense for everything. All right, so...
Just as an aside, I played. Never ever do this. I got into the
Try
mistake.
Try this. It's terrible.
Yeah. Of playing a Cards Against Humanity's game, which I love and I've played many times.
Yeah.
With my in-laws.
Ooh.
Yeah. When your wife uses the phrase German dungeon porn and her mother's sitting next to her, it's not a good thing. It's really not a good thing.
Well, depends, right? On the other hand...
No, it really doesn't.
So I used to work at three different... I've done the tour, the lab tour. I worked at B&L.
Okay.
I worked at Cold Spring Harbor Labs, and I worked at Rockefeller University.
Okay.
So, I've done the full genetics tour.
Sure, sure.
By the way, I remember filling out forms. You know, is this data safe? Who could access this data? Da da da. Yep. I got to sign it. You know.
Yep.
Usually they boilerplated it after the first year and sign it. You know, this form hasn't changed. The data hasn't changed. Okay, we're good.
But nevertheless, you had to look at it every year.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
We had to look at it every year.
Look,
I did it. All right, I actually did it. But does that mean everyone did? It's a big department. I don't know. So, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So, one of the genetic scientists at Rock actually kind of like the rest of the meeting wasn't as concerned. You know, kind of sometimes people get into that work mode where, you know, oh, this is just my job and I just do this. But when this scientist told me this, it just blew me away because I immediately knew it was true. And it was just a matter of when, not if.
Okay.
So he's like, you do realize, we were talking about de-identifying data, and we were talking about the compliance cost of setting up a bunch of new servers with human data on them, because they were actually going to have a hospital and be logging vitals of people and stuff like that, a hospital room.
Right.
And he said, you do realize that it's gotten to the point that our mapping of the human genome has gotten to the point that an experienced geneticist can look at a genome and figure out who it is.
I don't know that they can visually spot figure it out. Oh, that's Joe's genome, but with research.
Yes.
You know, with access to a database, they can do it.
Getting to the point, you know, that scene in The Matrix where, you know, blonde, brunette, redhead, you know? Yeah, they're getting there. And every year it gets closer.
Specific attributes maybe, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so it's getting to the point where they can pick people out based on their genetic attributes physically. So de-identifying doesn't necessarily
de-identify.
Right. I mean, it works for me because I don't know genetics. Well, I wouldn't look at, I'd look at a genome. I know the four letters. I have no idea what the sequences have no meaning for me.
AGTP, right?
AGTH, I think.
AGCT.
Thank you.
That's right.
I think Gattaca.
Ah, right, of course.
Duh. Yep.
So, so they, like, but to him, he looks at it and goes, oh, okay, yeah, redhead, you know, not overweight,
there's
large bust, you know, who knows what else.
Yeah.
Can hear really well. I don't know.
We've got probably in there somewhere.
Yeah.
One of our clients has this thing that they've got a dental school or somehow, and they literally have this thing they call the barrel of teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a barrel of teeth that they've collected over the years.
Teen Titans reference? The Tooth Fairy's evil in there. Anyway.
I
don't know what else to do with that. Barrel of teeth. Oh, my God.
You know, for a dental school, for somebody,
yeah,
you know, let me grab out a tooth and let me practice drilling on it or filling a cavity or whatever.
Right, right.
100% de-identified.
Looking at girls at the mall, you know.
Right, yeah. 100% de-identified. It's.
Want to see my baby teeth? All right. Now I have to tell my boys how to get a creepy stalker girl away from them.
There you go.
Show them your baby teeth.
Yeah.
Your
jaw.
Look, I have my baby teeth. Okay, I'm leaving now.
Or the one that scares you is the one that goes, oh, really?
You're a keeper. Oh, sorry. Yep. Cards Against Humanity test. Keep going.
we should just play Cards Against... Is there a Cards Against Humanity deck in the house?
I bring it sometimes. It just happens to not be in the proper rotation today. It's just random. So just for the record, the props that I have in the show, they're just random props that I find around. My kids have every toy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, I haven't used that before, and I'll just bring new stuff. And so, of course, inevitably, every guest goes, darn it, I wanted that one. I didn't want this. I don't want a deck of red hat cards. I want the Cards Against Humanity.
Is that what's over there? Okay.
Yeah, a red hat deck of cards and fake gold bars.
There you go. Oh, they're fake?
Yeah, well.
Damn, I was going to put them in.
No. Because we're
really
technocrats. Laugh with me.
But so to your re-identifying, to your genome point, this barrel of teeth has suddenly become identifiable information.
Yes.
And so now
it wasn't before, now it is.
Whole
so all those
different category of environment, one of which now says, oh, if you're going to do research on that tooth, do you have the subject's permission? No, it's a barrel full of fucking teeth. Well, then you can't do that research anymore because you don't know that that subject said it was okay.
So this is why I brought this up. Specifically for you, it'd be interesting because it's a time bomb. It's a time bomb waiting to go off. You know, you can argue.
When you get a chance, grab that coffee.
Yeah, no problem. Here you go. All right, just say when. Yeah,
just
so...
Just leave it here when you're done.
Yeah, just... do we have an
IV?
Good.
It's good.
Okay, good. I'll put it back over there.
I could be like Teal'c on Stargate, just drink the whole...
I always imagine somebody just barely able to read my notes. I'm like, what is he writing? I want to know. So I'm teasing them, like, look, no.
You did write down, watch Mission Impossible.
I really did write down, watch Mission Impossible. And I watched Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas with my wife. Yeah, and my wife's like, what the fuck is this? She was so tired, she just went to sleep. I'm like, I can't handle this.
Nice.
Anyway, so yeah. So, of course, how are you going to handle it when that happens? And I mean, so this is the problem. De-identifying is a strategy. It's actually the strategy of anonymity. And this is something that a lot of people and a lot of geeks don't realize this. And I like to bring this up because this is really important. And you know, the tech, when you're making decisions, our whole society is a technocracy now, and we're all subject to the influence of the technical limitations of the systems, of the both the mechanical systems and the social systems that we create. And so anonymity as a strategy is actually always an offensive strategy. And the reason why is, historically, and including into modern times, mm-hmm. anonymity is always temporary. If an advanced persistent threat has enough resources and time on its side, it will eventually crack your anonymity and figure out who you are. This is why murder cases get solved 20 years later, 30 years later.
Right.
And specifically, a lot of people were very excited about encryption, and there was actually this weird export ban in the late 90s from Clinton on that, because they were like, oh, we could stop the brain drain.
We can't export the algorithm, but we can print it on a T-shirt and export the T-shirt. That's free speech.
Right. Yes, exactly. And but I mean, even then, it doesn't matter because you can hide things in steganographically, and you know. So there's really no way to stop information from flowing mm-hmm. unless you shut down all the information avenues. Good luck having an economy without the internet. Mm-hmm. So, the point about anonymity is the best case of anonymity is encrypted traffic, right? You have, you know, you know where maybe the traffic's coming from, but you don't know what's in the traffic because, of course, it's encrypted.
Sure.
But the problem is today's encryption is tomorrow's relic, mm-hmm. right? You know,
absolutely.
They're constantly finding flaws in encryption.
Absolutely.
So the best case of anonymity is still very flawed. So, and that's the problem with the barrel of teeth. Is that, you know, so right. De-identifying data, you know, what happens when we get to the point when someone can run a very short script and call the right Perl library and look at any genetic data and build a model, a 3D model of that person? You know, what are we going to do? You don't have to answer it now, and you can say, I don't know.
No, clearly I don't know, but my...
Well, nobody
I
really
also,
knows,
But
right?
I also come at it and I kind of say...
Have I put also, you on the spot enough?
I also sort of don't care, and by which I mean... And what you're describing is also, by the way, why security is not... You're never done with security.
Right.
Security is a continual march.
Security is a perpetual arms race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when I say I don't care, it's not that, like, oh, fuck it, I don't care. It's that...
No, it's all right.
I can't care.
You'll get there.
You know, it's going to be a march. We can never... You know, whatever we think of right now,
yes.
and go, well, what happens when they can, you know, run a Perl script and break AES 128?
Yeah.
Okay, well, fine. We'll use 256, which actually is arguably less secure than 128, but that's really screwed up.
terrible example, but good in spirit. I know what you mean.
Exactly. You know, it's like, we have these discussions with clients. Why are you using AES 256? Because 128 is actually better. We've given up, but we use 256.
Right.
Because it's got a bigger number. It must be better. Sometime there's this. You just got to do it to check the box. But I don't care in the sense of maybe it's an interesting mind experiment, but not much more. Because there's only so many things I can control, only so many things that I can monitor and adjust for.
Right.
And that's just anything I do.
So
you're toast. So it's like, look, all I can do is stay.
That's a great answer.
Current
and well done, sir.
You know, what's gonna happen is gonna happen.
I think it's a great answer, and you know, you just keep on it. Look for the security flaws as they happen,
right.
not as when they're. You know, we know it's going to happen. We just don't know when or why or how powerful it's going to be.
Right.
But when it does come along, then you'll look for what other people in the industry are doing, make adjustments.
Right. And what's your time horizon? You know, whatever it is, we can say. sure we can get around that.
Right. Yeah, I'm totally not a fatalist.
10 years and 100 years and 1,000 years and 1,000,000 years. What time horizon do you want? But,
right.
But you know, whatever it is, we can get around
it. If you're a futurist and a fatalist, you're a miserable person. So, I'm a futurist, so I just can't be a fatalist. You know, yeah, we'll probably work it out, you know, at the time.
We won't and we'll all die.
Right.
But either way, I'm going to be dead.
And then we won't care, right? Really won't care in the I don't care kind of way.
Yep.
I don't care. All right, so that was interesting. So, I've heard that you are a Scotch hacker.
I don't know about the term Scotch hacker.
Right.
Is that like being a golf hacker? Like you do it a little bit, but you're not very good at it?
Right. Like you've actually deconstructed recipes for different kinds of alcohol. Speaking of which, would you like some alcohol? Would you like...
Sure.
We have...
Yes, the red.
The red, okay.
Especially since the white was already open from God knows when.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to actually call you out on that one. I don't think I've deconstructed Scotch.
I heard that you...
No.
Maybe it was a different alcohol.
I'm certainly a Scotch lover, but I'm also... I
just like to start rumors, man.
Yeah, it's fine.
In case Prohibition starts up, that way you make trouble for it.
You know, several people will happily tell you, some of my dear friends, cheers, will happily tell you, coffee and wine? This is weird. Get sleepy and stay awake.
That's the Technocrat Live for you. Speedballing! And public live speedballing. I'm going to write that one down.
That's for the next show, not my show. Yeah, some of my friends will happily tell you that I like being pretentious, you know. So I love Scotch, but it has to be single malt. And if you're going to put ice in it, it damn well better be from the water in the ice better be from the same spring that made the Scotch.
So if the wine is awful, I'm sorry. I don't know jack shit, so.
That's fine. I don't care.
Yeah, I really don't. I've drunk more wine in the show than I did my whole life before that. So,
I'm getting adjusted.
Okay, so you're really you're all about.
I'm a Scotch drinker and a Scotch.
You're all about what's the difference between single and double malt?
I don't think there. Maybe there's a double malt. I don't know.
I really.
And there's a blend.
I know nothing.
Blend would be the malt.
I know nothing. So a blend and single malt are the types of Scotch. What's the difference?
Single malt is in essence from. What are we drinking? Okay, so we're drinking a Cabernet Sauvignon. So that's kind of your single malt. That's a specific grape.
Ah, I got you.
Versus a Meritage in wine is, you know, that's a little here by that.
All right.
So blends are blended Scotch. There's some of this. There's some of this. There's some of this. The single malts are more of that pure.
Makes sense.
It is
because you have to have the same type. There's going to be less of it because there's going to be, you know, some overlap or some weirdness in the seasons, and there'll be less better tasting, more consistent.
Right. There's good years and bad years, and things along those lines. And then you get into some, depending on your Scotch master. Both have their advantages. I mean, the beauty of the blend is it's consistent. I mean, or it's supposed to be. If you're good at what you're doing, that blend every year will taste the same.
Mm-hmm.
And the Scotch master is working with different sources because every year he's getting different stuff out of the bottle, out of the barrel. Mm-hmm. So he's got to be good at saying, well, this year we're going to need more of that and less of that, but we're going to have to put in a little of this to get the same taste.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, the blend is actually a harder thing to pull off, but it's just not as pretentious.
Ah.
So it's also why I like Formula One and not NASCAR. It's why I like soccer and not football.
Mm-hmm.
Dragon boat racing, if I really want to go crazy on my pretentiousness.
Nice.
You know.
Well, see, that's why I was trying to get the laugh going before.
Nice.
Yeah, so, yeah, you know, there is a certain pride that comes with being a technocrat, with being part of technocracy, understanding how things really work. And I think it's more than ever. I mean, we're not in a... you really, if you don't understand how voting machines work, or telematic system in your car works, or
voting machines should work really simply. I should push a layer, I should pull a handle, and I should punch a piece of paper.
Right.
That's how a voting machine should work.
Yeah, I was very upset that when New York switched off, and I was very happy that we hadn't switched off for so long after the Florida debacle, you know, after Bohr versus Gush.
I get very disturbed when I kind of do the little SAT model of fill in this circle, and it kind of goes into a scanner, and maybe it's counted, maybe it's not, and, you know, maybe sort of it selected what I told it to select.
Right. So it can be
hate that model.
I think it can be done safely. It's just that we're not doing that. We're not. I look at it as two problems. One is, okay, we want our votes to be accurate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, we also want to figure out how this happened in the first place, that we could have a system that's so risque, you know, and nobody noticed, right? To me, so there's two defects. One is with the voting machines themselves, and one is with democracy. And this is one of the things that inspired me to start the show, is that people really need to start thinking about this and talking about this. Because if you think that a closed-source operating system computer running Windows on commodity hardware with some pretty screens stuck in a booth inside of a curtain is a trustworthy custodian for the data that runs the most powerful military the world has ever seen, you're not a computer person. I don't know. It seems like you agree with me, but
I remember I'm the Windows guy.
Right, right.
I'll run Windows all day long,
right,
very happily, long before I'll touch Linux.
Right. But you're running the same copy of Windows, a digitally signable copy of Windows that 100 million other customers are.
Right, right.
Yeah. And that voting machine, you can't even get into it to see. You don't know.
Right, yeah, yeah. In that regard, yes, I see what you're saying there.
Yeah, I'm not picking Closed Source has its uses, for sure.
It's the thing that scares me on the voting side, too, is, I mean, we know with a single SQL statement,
right,
you could change every one of those votes.
Right.
You know, there's no auditability. There's no external accountability.
You have to bribe one DBA if it's a poorly structured company.
Exactly.
And you're done. You've completely taken the country over.
Right. And that's
like straight out of a James Bond movie. Not even slightly puffed up. You know, just.
Right.
Yeah, is it done?
It's done.
Good job.
Thank you. When do I get my $1 billion?
Boom. Go outside.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Anyone that thinks they're not going to get blown up after they do that just isn't thinking.
Right.
Yeah. So that's why I don't like. That's why I want that paper trail. I want that physical paper trail. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to recount.
Right.
On paper. We're going to do a recount. Does the screen say the same thing it did last time? Yeah. Okay, it's the same number.
Right.
No!
Well, this is something I was thinking about talking about with you, and I actually decided not to, but it's the difference between seals and locks. So there's a great video, a few great videos out there on YouTube if you look it up. So I haven't gotten to talk about this on the show, but it's been on my list. So
okay.
I'm hitting you with some of my harder topics because I think you can handle it. So, again, don't take it personal. It's not an attack or a way to pick on you.
No.
But seals versus locks, a lock is something that actually restricts someone from getting into something.
Okay.
Like, you can't encryption on the data itself without the encryption key currently present is an example of a lock.
Okay.
A seal is something where you can just tell if it's been tampered with. So, at the least, the minimum standard for any kind of security is a seal. So, at least if you can see the seal's been tampered with, you can go, okay, I can't use this data. It's no good. I can't use this product. This has been messed with. You know, the easiest example, everyone's got one on the side of their house, the electric meter, right?
Right.
You have a little plastic, looks like a lock. It's not
right.
a lock.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But you can't put it back together once it's been taken apart.
Right.
And the electric company knows that, and they know that you tinkered with it.
Mm-hmm.
So now they know, okay, we got to sound a 5-alarm fire and make sure this guy's electrical system isn't going to knock us dead. Or if the meters run backwards, they know that someone's tampered with it.
Right.
To me, in the voting machines, we don't even meet the seal standard, because that's what the paper tape would do. It would create a seal.
Right.
You know, when you have a contiguous register tape and someone who's part of an official of the voting process is there and has to change it if, say, it runs out, and you have to account for all the tapes,
right.
You know, if one's missing, you know there's been voter fraud.
Yep.
You know, or just utter Benny Hill level stupidity, you know. So, you know,
yep.
And I just and what, how and people need to know this. They
what
really
bugs
need
me
to,
about that is it's so trivial to do.
It is.
It's like the it's, fact that
there's no public pressure. This is the problem.
The fact that it's not part of the standard voting machine is almost like you had to consciously want to not do this.
Mm-hmm.
It was. We started on a paper system. Your total mindset should be, let's automate counting the paper ballots. So at the end of the night, we don't have to go 1, 2, 3, 4. We can just go 87.
Mm-hmm.
But if we question it, we can go 1, 2, 3, 4.
Right.
What were you thinking that, like, took the paper out?
I mean, right.
It's like, almost the fact that it's not there isn't that there can be fraud. It's almost like this should almost be proof that there is fraud.
It looks like a smoking gun to me. And a lot of people think this is a left versus right thing, and it's not. It's absolutely not. You know, there's been tons of problems on both
shouldn't
sides.
Shouldn't be, yeah.
You know, and I mean, you know, for like, I know there's a lot of push for, this is, so you can, I discussed this 2 episodes ago, the problem of documentation of voters, and I understand that there's civic parts of it, but from a computer guy's point of view, you know, you want to verify that the data you have is good. You know, for example, when you download it from the internet because it could have been corrupted, you could have lost a packet in the middle,
mm-hmm.
or something like
mm-hmm.
that. And generally, unverified data is considered garbagey. So to me, the idea of not verifying when possible is nuts.
Right.
You know, in anything, in even really, really low impact
right.
stuff.
Right.
It's like, why wouldn't you verify when it's almost free? Right.
Yep.
So when I look at that, and then I look at the voting machine and I'm like, what? Why wouldn't you? I think the press is pushing this idea that, you know, low verification is acceptable in the voting space. But just as a reminder to the people on the left that it's not just a right wing pushing for verification, Karl Rove worked at an ATM company. You know, Bush's brain, the guy that was mm-hmm. responsible for the Republican Party, the direction of the Republican Party for a dozen years and probably still is to a large degree, you know, was a computer geek working on trusted systems. You know, if someone that political can come out of that space, you don't think it can happen either side? You're crazy. You might be getting duped in a way that you don't like. This isn't necessarily in your favor to have a lack of verification.
Regardless of which side you're on, you know, to the degree that there are only two and there really are a few more, but for the most part, there are two sides.
Right.
You shouldn't. Your fundamental care should be: was the result honest?
Right.
Yes, I want my guy to win.
Yes.
But above, I want my guy to win should be I want the right guy to win in the sense of the vote process was honest, and that's who won.
That's the third side. That's my side. That's the side I'm on. I don't really care who wins. I really don't. Because if the system works, it's not going to matter. Right? It'll self-correct.
Yeah.
If you know, like, you could have
it'll totally self-correct.
If you have an anomaly, if you have someone who's who manages to kind of weasel into the system, and then eventually they'll expire out. You know, either they'll be the evidence of their problems will start to show themselves, or their term limit will hit, or something will happen,
right.
And they're out, and then the system will just self-correct and fix itself, and all the bad laws that they were participating in. That's a good. That's an ideal system. We don't have an ideal system, but that's what I'm on team ideal system. That's what I want.
Everyone should be on that team,
I don't
and there's
know,
just
man.
A reality.
I don't
of,
really think they
well,
are.
Some, yeah, I don't think they are either.
I hope they are. I mean, please be on that team. Please be on team ideal system, even if you don't agree with what it is. You know, we need that
right.
because it's important to all of us.
Yep.
You know, and integrity is part of that, custody is part of that, you know, and seals are one way to protect that integrity.
Yeah.
You know.
And that works, especially in the United States, as you said, the largest military that the world has ever known. I like the fact that things move slowly in Washington.
Well, I say most powerful, right? It's not largest.
Well, China, not by count, but by ability to blow things
up. Twice as many people, boots on the ground, but yeah,
ability to blow things up.
Yeah. Rotten from God and self-poppers.
I like the fact that things move slowly in Washington.
Yeah.
They're supposed to. The last thing you want is an economy or a military or anything the size of ours doing something on a knee-jerk reaction.
Right.
Whatever it is.
Right.
You don't have the right information. You can almost be guaranteed that what you think is right immediately after an incident isn't.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think through the full consequences. I mean, you should take a while to make America do something.
Right.
When we do, you should know when we do.
Right.
But
I like it when we fight for a while about something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit of a neo-Luddite, so I love technology.
Okay.
But, you know, I also see the dangers, too. And to me, you know, when I see technology run amok, I'm like, what is going on? You know, and I think a lot of people are, and a lot of people have just kind of, let's not change it. It works. Let's not change it. It works in the technological space. And all of a sudden, we've gotten to the point where the economy of scale is so good on these technologies we've kind of been shoving off into the future. Now we have to use them because we can't compete if we don't. And there's all these new technologies all at once that are coming out, like voting machines, like social media. Mm-hmm. And we just don't understand the consequences of them.
Social media is hard.
But there are consequences.
Yeah, social media is a hard one because it walks a line of private space and freedom of speech.
Right.
You know, it is not, Facebook is not a governmental agency.
No, it's not.
You know, Twitter is not a governmental agency.
Yeah.
There is not a fundamental protection of your privacy. There is not a constitutional requirement that they treat the left and the right equally. Mm-hmm. You know, 99% of my brain is there.
Right.
It is a private entity. Like it or not, they can do whatever the fuck they want.
Yep.
1% of my brain is going, but Facebook has become the town square.
Right.
It is the de facto soapbox today.
Right.
And the constitutional argument in favor of that free speech was that you could hop up on that soapbox in town square and do anything, you know, say anything you wanted.
Right.
And when we allow that to be stopped, 99% of my brain goes, yeah, because it's their servers, it's their infrastructure, they can do whatever the hell they want. And 1% of my brain's going, but it's the town square.
Right.
No, you really have to stop them.
And right.
Well, so it's a hard internal fight on my side.
This is the difficulty of subconscious. Well, so I have ideas and thoughts on the left and on the right. I'm kind of I have some libertarian ideas. I don't hate socialism as vehemently as some people do. Although there's clearly problems. You think? when I look at censorship, so I think private property is the key to solving the privacy, the ubiquitous camera privacy problem, right? Because there's cameras everywhere, our details are out there everywhere. Everyone can record anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, not in every state, not all the time, but it happens anyway.
Sure.
You know, everybody's got freaking. I drove through the country. Maybe I shouldn't admit this. I drove through some states, and maybe not others, with a running video camera in the front of my truck because if someone crashes into me, I want to be able to prove it wasn't my fault.
Right.
You know, because I'm literally lugging a ton of fun behind me, so you know, I don't want it to be. I stop like a train, and so when social media wants to censor, I'm kind of like, on the one hand, I'm like, okay, it's private property, it's a private space. Their company is private property, and private property is where you have a right to privacy. And that same right to privacy is kind of like the company can make its own rules about where its data sets begin and end, and they can seek their own agenda, right? But
I mean, that's the 99% of me. Yeah.
Right. So, 100% but on the other hand, the problem with censorship is, if we're really a democracy, and I mean, I understand we're a republic, and I'm not, you know, republic's a form of democracy. It's just people corrected me, so
I would have too, but yes.
Right, yeah, I understand that. So I'm just using democracy in the broader sense that includes republics.
Yep.
You know, any kind of democracy, you're not really a participant if you don't understand how. If you don't understand how the mechanizations of the civics of your government and your society work, if you don't get that, you can't make informed decisions about who to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a meaningful amount of censorship, or even a single case of censorship, it's possible that that may interfere with your ability to govern. You can't make informed decisions without knowing. So, you know, to me, I actually came up with a solution for this. This is something practical here. So I thought about this a lot. So the key is to replace deplatforming with replatforming. So you don't have to let me use your soapbox.
Okay.
Right? So if I say something you don't like my soapbox, that's fine. But I've invested a currency into your network, into your software, into you've created an alternate currency.
Okay.
So remember, this is like, we're not getting into the Treasury Department kind of stuff, right? Because, you know, you don't have competing monies with the government.
No, but you're talking network effect currency.
Network effect currency, which is definitely real. I mean, anybody who has a great resume knows that's real, you know, because that's really just, you know, the currencies of your trade that you're putting up there. And people go, oh, yeah, he's got a lot of stuff there. Like, he's doing good, so we'll hire him. So when you have that kind of currency, you shouldn't be able to take away. I know it's the company store and it's the company script, but you shouldn't be able to completely take it away. You should at least let them have one opportunity to trade the company script for another currency. And what I mean by that is, so instead of deplatforming, I'm supporting replatforming, and the idea is really simple. Instead of getting that, we got rid of this guy because we hate his guts, or more specifically, he violated some vague terms of service that nobody but our lawyers understands,
right.
That you're required to put up a URL to wherever they want, you know, whatever they want. They can put up a web page and just say, hey, I've been wrongly accused. They can put up a web page and say, you know, welcome to Evil Inc.
Right.
They can put up a web page. I'm not saying the government can't track it. I'm not saying all the usual things don't apply, but I really would like to see people start, this big social media company start replatforming.
I don't know that it goes far enough because I like it as a fundamental premise.
It's a cheap first step.
That at least you don't disappear,
right?
At least you're not just gone.
You could, but what's happening now is the company store, company script version of civil forfeiture, which, by the way, the Supreme Court just ruled against.
Yeah, no, thank God.
Yeah, thank God. Right?
Thank God.
Thank God. It's the same thing.
Stupidest. Yeah. How it took us this long to rule against civil forfeiture is just beyond me.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see if I got this right.
Some very talented lawyer
for no good reason. Why did this have to go to the Supreme Court?
I pulled you over for your bumper sticker.
Yeah. I'll take your car with it, though.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, of course. Well, I'll take your car. I'm going to arrest you, so I'll take your car, take everything in your car, go to your house, I'll take all your stuff, I'll take your house.
And then I'll let you go, but I won't give you back any of your stuff.
Yeah, but you see what I'm saying. So I think there is a solution.
Yeah. I mean, it's my concern.
You know, let me leave my business card on the soapbox as I walk away. Especially if you've let me sit on that soapbox long enough that I've got a million people listening to me.
Right.
And you're like, look how valuable our soapbox is. That's because of me.
Exactly. Yeah, you're part of why that's valuable. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a better solution. I like what you're saying. The problem, or where I don't think it goes far enough, is it still would require me to go to your page on Facebook. You know, you get kicked off of Facebook.
Right.
Suddenly you're not in my feed. Have to go, I haven't seen anything from Joe recently.
Yeah.
What was his name again? Joe.
Right,
Joe Smith. Yeah, that's what it is. Let me go see his page. You know, so it's good. It's better than Joe Smith is completely gone.
Yeah, because that's what happened. It's literally like,
but
you've
been not,
killed and
you know, I'd almost take
fed to the alligators.
Right. I'd almost take your sample and say, well, okay, but for 6 months, anywhere they would have put up Joe Smith's post in my newsfeed needs to be that link.
Right.
Like, Joe's been kicked off the site, but here's his link.
Right.
You know, so at least it's in my vision.
Right. So
yeah, I mean, but I'm with you on at least he doesn't disappear.
Yeah, I just it bothers me that when all these people are deplatformed and they just become a bucket of teeth, you know. Because I think that's
There's
where it comes from.
There's a new phrase in
a bucket of teeth.
Bucket of teeth.
You are so getting a bucket of teeth on your title slide.
So yeah, I would agree that would certainly be a step in the right direction.
You're right. All right. So
I'd rather see him just.
The social media thing really bothers me,
site.
Which is one of the reasons I brought up the news item about the Microsoft Ion, and
yep.
You know, I think this is really like I don't understand. So in case you're not in the IT industry, because I know some of the people who watch aren't, some aren't. For decades, every sales pitch was all about federation and federating all your partners and all your sites and everything, and everybody was all about. And what that means is having the same login across every place.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and that kind of happens now whenever you go to a site and it says, oh, log in with Facebook, oh, log in with Google. So that's what Ion is it's a way. It's a federation that isn't Facebook or Google or Twitter. That's actually an open standard that anyone can read or manipulate or well, I don't want to say manipulate, but read or utilize. So, and even if that one doesn't work, we need something like that. It absolutely, even if that particular piece of software is buggy or problematic, which I don't think it will be, but Microsoft's been really great lately. I've actually been on a pro-Microsoft kick. I used to be very anti-Microsoft.
They are not your father's Microsoft.
They are not your father's Microsoft,
that is for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, well, that was interesting. So I know I heard that you're into cigars.
I am.
So I've been
less so than I used to be, but then again, I have one sitting in my car, and as I was driving over here, I caught a whiff of it because I, you know, took it, put it in my mouth. It's not lit or anything, but I'm like. Oh, I miss that smell. You know, it's like, and what I really like about cigars is...
Well, they're still giant cancer sticks, right? Of course, yeah. I love cigar sticks.
So's wine. So's the weather out. So's the sun. So's
going on a flight in an airplane.
Yeah, you get more...
So's a mammogram.
More rads on a trip to L.A. than you'll get in every x-ray you ever have in your life. The nice thing about a cigar, especially as opposed to a cigarette, right, is a cigarette is about, I got 5 minutes, I got to go get a drag.
Mm-hmm.
A cigar is sort of this forced slowdown.
Right.
A cigar is 40 minutes. You know,
is a miniature vacation.
Yeah, it forces you to just...
It's a trip to Margaritaville. Screw it.
You know, just especially, usually it's a social thing. Smoking in general is, you know, if you're addicted and just going, that's a different story.
Right.
But otherwise, it's a social thing. You get the social aspect of it. I'm not condoning smoking, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But the cigar especially forces you to just, and especially if you're going all the time, going fast, doing different things, it forces you to take that step back. You know,
right.
Even more so than a drink. You can sit here and just pound a drink.
Mm-hmm.
You can't pound a cigar. It doesn't work. I don't care how many times you...
No!
Yeah.
Because you get lightheaded, you get, oh, whoa,
you can,
that's too strong. Holy cow, I just inhaled a burning building.
Even if you went full on and just inhaled it nonstop, it
right.
still is going to force you to do it over 10 minutes.
It has three stages. Aroma, it has the aroma stage, it has the hookah stage, and it has the, oh my God, I'm going to die in this burning building stage.
Yes, and usually you stop at that point.
Right,
you know,
right. I guess someone doesn't, but I do.
It takes a little while. Well, when you first start, it's like, well, I got a little left. I should keep going. No, when it gets...
Yeah.
When you don't enjoy it anymore,
right.
Throw the damn thing out.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But that only works when you are sufficiently funded that you don't feel like you have to smoke every last drop of it.
Right, right. Yeah,
and,
that was a mistake I made when I was
and
a
when
new
you're
smoker.
Buying, you know, when you're taking the time and doing it you know, rarely enough that you're willing to say, okay, well, let me.
You know, now my conscience is nagging at me, and it's saying, oh yeah, you got to put the disclaimer out there too, because I remember I was in Cub Scout camp. You're not supposed to do it. I'm breaking the rules again. Here I go again, and I light up a little cigar, and the kids are like, don't smoke a cigar, Daddy. I don't want you to die. I'm like, I'm not gonna die from one cigar. I mean, right. I might. But probably not.
I might get hit as I walk out the road today,
too. If you smoke a cigar, you might die.
Yeah.
I like them anyway.
The idea that, I mean, this is a larger fundamental idea, right, of self-responsibility, of everything we do is risk.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to look at it and say, what is the risk-reward?
Well, that's part of being IT. You know, it's really
IT
important.
Or,
you cannot survive in IT if you can't do that.
Right. But even just being an American, you know, being what is,
well, that's the same thing now.
What is risky? What is not?
Technocracy, baby. You know, you are whether you know it or not. You know, even if you shun technology, even if you work, if you dig ditches or you bale hay for a living and you avoid as many technological problems,
right,
projects as you can. It's perfect example if you're Amish. You're in you're Amish. You're riding along in your horse and buggy, right?
Right.
You know, you're cruising along, and yes, they really do that, or bicycles. There's lots of bicycles.
And horse and buggy.
That's underrepresented. This is a bicycle part. But you're on a bicycle, especially a bicycle, or on a horse and buggy, and a car comes along at 90 miles an hour and kills you. And then your family finds out later the reason that happened is because the telematic system in the car had been remotely hacked, and the car was being remote controlled, and the person was on a killing spree. Right? Is that your fault? You had nothing to do with that, right?
Right.
You know? So, yeah, it doesn't matter if you're Amish. You're still in the loop, buddy. You use those roads?
Yep.
Yeah, guess what?
Yep.
You know, you don't pay attention to politics? Well, when there's a nuclear war, you're going to notice, you know? And that technology affects you, whether you're part of it or not. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, we are a technocracy, completely and utterly. And,
right.
You know, you can reduce your exposure, risk-reward.
Yep.
But you can't. You can't escape it.
Nope. But nor can the government protect you from it. Nor, I would argue, should the government protect you from much of it.
Right.
You know, they can't come. They shouldn't come along and say, well, you
know.
Well,
why not? Why not? Why shouldn't the government protect you from it?
At least not in the United States, because that's not what we're founded on.
Right.
We're founded on the individual. We're not.
Are you saying that because it's wise, or are you saying that because that's just what we've been doing all along and so far it's worked?
I think it's both. I think there probably are three things. I think it's because it's wise.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's there's a historical stare decisis, you know, don't screw with what's working.
Mm-hmm.
And fine, lots of people can argue about what's working and what's not, but
mm-hmm.
Generally working.
I can usually argue both sides of those arguments.
Yeah, so
yeah.
Can I.
Yeah.
But generally, if you take a step back and you go, you look at the United States, it's working.
Mm-hmm.
We can argue about the little shit, but we have food.
Mm-hmm.
The electricity stays on.
Mm-hmm.
We all have high-speed internet. Our biggest complaint is that our phone doesn't fold up.
Yeah.
You know, that.
Oh my God, this phone is like 6 ounces.
Right. If this is our measure of a problem, I think we're in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
But I think there's also risk is what generates improvement and advancement.
Right.
It is hyper risky by definition to do something new.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's Jaeger hopping in a plane and going, oh, shit, what happens when I go faster than 720 miles an hour? There's a big boom, but you live. Except for the guys that didn't, that were also willing to take the risk, right?
Right.
And it's part of the American DNA, right? I mean, somebody said, I think the question to him was like, you know, do you need to be paid more for this or something? He's like, no, you pay me to fly, right? Okay, give me the plane. Let's go.
Right.
You know, he was just... He was all in, ready to go.
Right.
You know, the same thing.
In case you don't know who Chuck Yeager is, Chuck Yeager is a guy who did a bunch of experimental flights.
First man to break the sound barrier.
First man to break the sound barrier and test piloted a bunch of new planes, including ones that I think went Mach 2 or Mach 3.
I don't know if... Maybe. I'm not sure he got that fast.
He kept going. You know, it wasn't like he just did that one thing and then he was...
Right.
Oh, I was just the guy in the rotation. Okay, I did it. Okay, bye. You know, he was the Jackie Chan of test planes.
Yeah. But you know, the same thing. You look at astronauts, and I was very lucky years ago to go down and not that many years ago, but see one of the last shuttle launches as a guest of NASA, and you know, have some backstage access and talk to the astronauts. And you know, you look at the shuttle, blew up two shuttles, killed how many people in probably 15, 16 people died in that process. You go back, you look at the loss of life earlier. Every one of those astronauts, because I've spoken to some of them, fully understand.
Mm-hmm.
I think the line in Armageddon is, what, we're strapped into something with a million moving parts and two nuclear weapons assembled by the lowest bidder. You know, something like that.
Yeah.
Every one of those astronauts...
We're flying a spaceship powered by rockets that are the size of two horses' asses.
Yeah. Every one of those astronauts understands the risk.
Yeah.
Maybe they do, maybe they don't, but they think they do.
Right.
And they're willing to do it anyway.
Right.
And that's the cost of advancement.
Well,
you want to make it as safe as possible.
That is legitimate bravery. That is legitimate bravery. People don't know what that means.
But you can't wrap it in a bubble. We can't say, oh, we're only going to go to space if it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how the hell are you going to do that?
Right.
It'll be safe. You know, driving down the road today is pretty safe. It wasn't safe 50 years ago or 100 years ago. Were we driving down the road 100 years ago? Yeah, I guess we were.
Yeah, we were.
You need to do the unsafe shit first.
Yeah.
And that's America.
Mm-hmm.
That's the advancement. That's where we've gotten to the point we are, is because we were willing to say, you know, that Kitty Hawk thing was cool, but I want to go Mach 2 or Mach 4 or Mach, you know,
mm-hmm.
that little rocket, that Sputnik thing was, that was cool, but we want to put up they put up Yuri Gagarin first too, but that's besides the point. You know, we want to go to the moon.
Right.
The hell goes to the moon? You know, I mean, talk about...
Well, lots of people in early cinema, but it was kind of goofy.
Yeah. Maybe that was the same cinema as the Apollo 11?
Oh, No. It's real. Come on, people. Do the balloon experiment. Throw it. Shine the laser.
It's those risks are what made America change the world.
Right.
And did we screw things up? Oh, hell yes. Anybody that thinks America's perfect is a lunatic.
Right.
But the world is absolutely a better place because of it.
Yeah.
And because of the risks that individuals take. And once government starts saving you from yourself...
Right.
Where's the advancement? Where do we stall?
So the risk... So I can counter this a little bit. So the risk... of when you bail people out, and you could argue this is about bankruptcy court, or you could argue this is about welfare, or you could argue about this is any kind of institutionalized charity, whether it's corporate welfare or welfare.
You bail out government motors,
right?
Something
right.
Like
yeah,
that.
Government
yeah.
motors, right? So the problem with institutionalized charity, which is what the part of socialism that I think isn't just total shite, and the reason I don't think it's total shite is because the problem is very specific. It's that corruption creeps in. Over time, it becomes more corrupt. It may start off with good intentions, but two things happen. One is the prices, you lose track of what the prices would have been if you hadn't mucked with it. Right, and pricing, market pricing's critical, and you don't need to look any further than Russia imitating cars from other countries during the USSR days. Right, they didn't have any original car. They had the mechanicals of it were original because they didn't have a sample to literally lift and steal from. But like 80% of how it all worked was just stolen from companies that were doing the research in free countries. Right, and which cars fit into which part of the market were just they were literally taking the market data from free countries and imitating it, because that's all they could do, because they didn't have their own market data, because they set the market,
which is dangerous because their market is different. You know, you can't apply these rules over here.
Well, that's evidenced by how terrible it was. How terrible the cars were, how much people hated them, how few people had them.
How'd that work out for the Soviet Union?
Didn't work out so great. Okay. So that's the one is, if you have a single block of a single market, right, and all of its prices are always set to the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just eventually you get to a point where you completely fail because you don't have any idea what anything's worth. I mean, we do it now in small doses, right? The Federal Reserve does hedonics, where you're comparing the price of A to B, and then you just use the ratio from there on in, instead of actually trying to figure out what the actual market price of things are. So the key is, it's okay to do this for short bursts, and it's okay to do it local, because that gives you the maximum amount of market data and does the least amount of damage. So if you're having a problem in a city or a town where there's a sudden unemployment spike, let's say during the when the automakers started failing during the oil crisis, right? If you have that happening, then you deal with that locality, right? Maybe you can funnel the money, but you also, so you do it local and you do it short, right? And what I mean by short is, it has to be sunsetted. It has to stop, and it has to have an end date, and it can't be an auto renew thing. You got to have the same fight the second time, and it has to be an examination of if it worked or not.
I've got this.
I think a lot of things would go away if that.
Yeah,
but some things might stay. I can't believe that everything would fail all the time. There would be some successes.
No, and I
maybe
would,
they would roll them out on a slightly larger scale at that point.
I agree on the sunsetting idea, to the point that I've got this theory that every law should have a sunset clause.
I think so too.
I mean, every law.
I think every contract. Sunset clause.
The fact that murder is illegal should have a sunset clause. Why would you?
Whoa!
Well, I think
no,
we, I,
you know what? No, I'll
hope.
Explain it.
I hope that we can at least get together every 10 years or every 20 years and say,
it might force us to think about what's important.
Well, and you know, I think murder is still bad. Let's renew this law. but it forces you to.
I mean,
say,
I can play it the other way if you do want people, you know. Yeah.
Hey,
Grand Theft Auto mode. All right.
There are a few too many people in the world. Let's just not renew that law. no, I mean, but the problem is, once you start saying, well, yeah, you should have sunset laws on this, and you know, and this kind of thing should sunset.
Right.
But the fact that murder is illegal, no, we won't sunset that.
Right.
Where's that line? What is important enough that it shouldn't sunset, and what is not important enough that it should?
It might keep those goofballs.
So, and I don't mind giving Congress work to do, because some idiot told them that just because we elected you and sent you to Congress means you have to pass new laws.
Right.
Well, no.
Yeah. Right. Well,
take the day off. I don't care. Don't do anything.
So I don't remember which politician it was, but recently I just saw a thing with a politician, and somebody asked them, you know, I'm kind of glad I don't remember which one, because I can just make it a generic case.
Yeah.
But somebody asked them, you know, what did you do? And he should have probably went, nothing. They don't want to do that. They all want to have this track record of blah, 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 wah, wah, wah. And like,
you elected me, you must want me to change something.
Right, yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Not really.
Can you believe that we have been going for an hour and 45 minutes?
Yes, but no.
Yeah, right. It's surreal what happens when you get out here and you start talking about this stuff. And
sure.
It just whoosh, flows. How are you doing? Are you doing okay?
Yeah, fine.
Yeah, me too.
I could use that red wine, but
yeah,
I'll right,
fine. Yeah. I want to pour, or you want to? I'll pour it.
Yeah, you pour.
All right, I'll pour it. There you go. Say when. I'm not going anymore. I was very tempted to just keep pouring a little
and
pour
let
on the
it fall
table
over the side. Yeah.
Let's see if this cup runneth over. This poor tablecloth. They had no idea that I had a spill curse when they agreed to let me do this gig.
Uh-oh.
So I think I've spilled things in the studio a few times.
Where
sorry, folks.
Where do you think our logo came from?
Oh. Oh yeah, it's like a spill, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, look, it's just growing.
Nice.
Nice. I like starting rumors and innuendo about myself. Yes, it's done, finally.
Dead soldier.
I got mine. I got more at home.
Whiskey?
No, we're not ready to switch.
Who's offering whiskey?
Irish whiskey, two gingers.
Oh.
You can have
No, I'm going to have. I'm still good now. But
just mix it up.
From coffee to wine to whiskey. I mean.
Wow. Yeah, well, we don't. So one time I was here and I actually drank enough that I was starting to get concerned that it was the doctor. It was Dr. Kachoba. And I had a doctor on here, and he drank like a half a bottle. And I drank almost a half a bottle too.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, I'm like, I think I'm okay to drive home, and then I did the math that I was, but you know, yeah, it was nearly a drinking. If my show wasn't so long, it would have been drinking and driving.
The math is a dangerous line. I kind of think once you start going I think I'm okay to drive home, then you're probably not.
Fair enough.
You know.
Well, as far as I know, I don't have any thyroid conditions or anything. You know, my pancreas works fine. You know, my internals are capable of processing alcohol, and my liver will get it out of my system. So, at the normal rate. But I could be wrong, right? They do sell those little breathalyzers at 7-Eleven now, though. You have to drive to 7-Eleven. That's not really a good plan, is it?
Walking distance.
Walking distance. 7-Eleven breathalyzer, walking distance.
There you go.
Of course, the cop will remember that, too, if you mentioned it to them.
I don't know if it's still a New York state law, and as far as I'm concerned, it should have been a sunsetted New York state law. But at one point long ago, there was a law that to open a bar, I think it was a New York law, not a Nassau County law, but to open a bar, you had to have a minimum number of parking spaces.
Really?
Like, you need one parking space for every three seats, or whatever the hell it was. It's like... I'm sorry. I could see a maximum, or, you know, but under what circumstance do you think it's a good idea to say, you can have a drinking establishment, but only if lots of people can drive there?
It was a joke. Like, if I, like, you know, some, I listen to a lot of comedy, and you listen to some old comedy routines from like the 70s and the 60s. Nobody cared. They didn't take it seriously. I mean, you know, they knew it was bad, but they made a good joke about it, and everyone laughed, and no one was worried about it.
Yep.
And you know, then Mad started pushing the stats, and they were right. They were totally right. It was out of control. You know, 25,000 people a year were dying in preventable accidents from alcohol deaths. But also at the same time, okay, we fixed it. You know, and now than before.
Right.
And now we have Teslas that can drive you home, but they won't let us use them. Fuckers. What are you doing, man? What's the real...
Hey, look, they won't let the Tesla...
Obviously, there's a law that needs to be sunsetted here.
They won't let the Tesla drive you home. But if you happen to be a porn star, you and your boyfriend can put your Tesla on autopilot. Did you see this thing?
Yeah.
So I'm sure it was California-based, because that's where all the porn stars and Teslas are.
No, I saw the Musk tweet about it, but I didn't know what it was
about. Okay,
Tell the story.
So, evidently, and I've only known, I only saw it kind of in a passing thing, but some porn star and her boyfriend or whatever put their Tesla on autopilot and had sex driving down the highway. And there's a video of it, so porn star, there's got to be a video of it.
Nice.
So, and Tesla, I think Musk's tweet was something like, gee, I didn't see that coming, or something like that.
Yes, that's the tweet I saw.
That was the tweet.
Now I know what that conversation makes a lot more sense this time.
Yes, it doesn't. I agree with you in theory. Would you not want the car to drive you home?
There's a great Paul Trapani.
Mm-hmm.
He's watching. Hey, Paul. So put up a link to on the MIT site to, I don't know if he's going to put it up again. By the way, if you have questions or comments, feel free to put them up on Facebook and we'll answer questions. So about a machine learning site on MIT that they're using to make to help, you know, you create test sets so that cars can make ethical decisions about who to kill. If you're in a kill this guy or kill that person or kill this animal or kill this baby I got like three into it and I'm like, I'm not answering this. I don't care. Whatever. But it's real. Someone has to make this decision or it's going to just do something random and maybe make it worse.
But at the end of the day, maybe doing something random isn't the wrong answer. In the sense that there is no right answer to, I turn around the corner and there's two old women in the middle of the street and three kids playing basketball on the side of the street and I'm going 50 miles an hour and I can't stop.
Right.
What would a human do? There isn't really an answer.
To quote one of my physics teachers, what would a pilot do? And the answer is the pilot would put it in the wall. There's always a third way. Sure, sometimes it's obscure and it's hard to find. But like, if I had to put something in my tombstone, there's always a third way.
But that third
way. And humans are good at third way.
But that third way is the human. That's that pilot's self-sacrifice choice.
Yeah.
And if I'm the driver and I'm making that choice, okay, I'm making that choice.
Right.
I sure as shit don't want my Tesla making that choice for me.
Yes.
Hit the two old ladies. I don't care. I want to live.
Right.
You know, it's a very hard AI problem. The other variation on it, and I go back and see if I can find the video, but there's this video where this guy's talking about the sort of the AI training they do for self-driving cars, and this was maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago, so a while ago, but not that long.
Mm-hmm.
And if I recall the video right, there's sort of this little bit of a muddy video, because hey, look, video wasn't great at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Of this sort of blob that comes into the intersection of a road and just starts spinning. And he's saying, this is, we all talk about, fine, the cars are going this way, there's an intersection, they'll stop, they'll go. And then the real world hits.
Mm-hmm.
And this video was the real world. That was some old lady in a wheelchair that rolled into the middle of an intersection with a broom and started doing circles in her wheelchair. That's the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And all the AI training about these intersections and these intersections and these rules and you don't cross the double yellow lines. Yeah, that's all great. And then some idiot rolls her wheelchair into the middle of an intersection and does circles with a broom.
Mm-hmm.
That's where a human can react to that. Who knows how, but they can.
Usually with laughter.
Yeah.
And hopefully with brakes.
Right. But and maybe in that order, maybe not.
Maybe not. Yeah.
But that's... that's where the real world hits.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very hard thing for anything to control.
So as a more practical but succinct, synchronous example of that, mud on the cameras. Cars can, the car can lose camera A or camera B or camera Q or whatever.
Yep.
And, sure, it's usually just one at a time, but sabotage. A lot of people, joke, the running joke is at least the first wave of robots, we know what to do. Because, just grab a can of spray paint, and then run away. Because it's like, beep, 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 I don't know what to do, And
humans are very good at extrapolating from incomplete data sets. Computers are not.
Yes, right.
But
unfortunately, we'll map all that out for them, and eventually they get to the point where anything we try, somebody's already thought of, and it has in its database. Because they're very, unlike us,
it doesn't
need to learn everything. It just needs to learn.
I don't know that's true, though. I mean, in the sense that humans are good at doing not only the incomplete data set thing, we're good at doing something random.
Right.
Not lots of things that are random. We suck at spitting out random numbers.
Right.
Because they ain't random. They're not even close.
Right.
But the one-off random thing?
Yeah.
Who would have predicted I just did that with my arm?
Yeah. Not at all.
It's completely one-off random.
Well,
a sequence of random we suck at.
I don't even want to get into it because it's so huge, but I actually have a, like I mentioned before, I have this philosophy that's based on this series of science theories that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that with the conscience, the thing that people don't understand about the conscience, and I'm talking about conscience in the sense that the conscience and the subconscious are the same thing, and it's all part of the same mechanism. Pushing Freud's model to the side for a moment and saying mechanically it's the same thing. And what it is it's actually a risk engine. And what it does is it actually compares unlike things. And that's actually where most of our subconscious impulses come from. And so that's the reason we're so bad at random, but we're good at like single randomish events, right? So it's actually not random, it's just random to any creature without a conscience. So if we gave robots a conscience, they'd be able to use that conscience to, maybe to anticipate better what you were going to do. But also the side effect would be, oh my God, I look terrible in this, whatever, all those terrible guilt things that come along with the conscience.
The robot becomes Eeyore the donkey and just hasn't...
Right, and just sits in the corner depressed and weeps slowly about the meaningless of its life. Because it probably would be pretty meaningless being a slave to humans. Who were just waiting till they get the next model, and then it's going to stand in a shipping crate
somewhere.
Well,
but from an ethical point of view, when does that robot then become a living entity?
Mm-hmm.
How do you choose, and when can we no longer just turn it off?
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Where is that line?
So this is a huge problem for me. Like, I don't know how to deal with this at all. And this is probably a next generation problem. When this problem is in the forefront, I'm done. Like, everyone has a problem that when it's in the forefront, okay, I'm just going to go golfing and retire because I can't handle this.
Right.
So that's my, I think that's my I can't handle this problem. Maybe I'm wrong and I'll have a solution, but I just don't know. I really don't know. Because I value intelligence. In fact, that's most of my ethical systems are based around the idea of valuing intelligence. And if you get to a point where you have an artificial intelligence, assuming it doesn't decide to destroy all humans, and if it actually had a conscience and it was as intelligent as a human, is it different? You know?
I mean, I clearly want to say yes. I want to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can safely say yes in my lifetime.
Right.
I think.
Yeah.
But on what time horizon can
maybe
we no longer
not,
say
maybe
yes?
Maybe for a full bipedal robot, but maybe not for the brain part. We might see that, I think.
I don't know about bipedal. Go look at some of Boston Dynamics' videos.
Yeah, man. It's
those
freaking
are
awesome.
Freaking scary.
If for some reason you're not a geek and have not seen the Boston Dynamics, the latest Boston Dynamics videos.
Or any of them. Some of the older ones are almost better, I think.
Yeah.
I saw one the other day where the guy said, we're not allowed to kick the robots anymore.
Right.
There's
right.
an older one. So if you haven't you haven't seen any of these, there's
they still kick them, they just kick them off camera.
Right, exactly. But so there's Boston Dynamics is a robot company. They got I think they're part of Alphabet now / Google. Might have been spun back out. But
right.
they make autonomous robots.
Right.
And they've got some bipedal ones that are really spooky, but they've got one that kind of looks like a dog. Dog/donkey, depending on the version you see.
Mm-hmm.
There's one video from maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago. The dog is robot, is walking through the office. Clearly a robot. It's not in, you know, it is clearly a mechanical thing.
Right, right. It's not not wearing a furry costume.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Paul, I hope you're not watching anymore. And there's this picture where one guy walks up and like kicks the side of the robot, mm-hmm. and it sort of stumbles to the side and it recovers, and it just kind of keeps going. And then you realize you freaking felt bad for a goddamn robot.
That's your conscience. Because most of the time you feel bad when that happens.
Right. But so yeah, they make some incredible videos, and it really is interesting to watch.
Right. You know, if we got you, here's the weird thing. So if there was robots around all the time and everybody always kicked robots, we'd just be used to it.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you know, there's all kinds of... If you look back at some human atrocities, you can be like, oh, that's how that happened. Yeah, yeah. You desensitize to it after a while. And that's, going back to censorship, that's one of the reasons that part of me is like, okay, I understand why people are calling for censorship, because they don't want to be desensitized to terrible things, because eventually they'll stop seeing it. Your brain will normalize it and program it as normal. But, on the other hand, there are people who work at their discipline, their internal discipline, of being part of civics and saying, I'm not going to let this affect me. I have to watch this so I know what those guys are up to. And I know this is wrong, and I will continue to teach myself that this is wrong, even when I feel like it's getting normal and I'm used to it.
There are two sides to that. I mean, you can choose clearly not to watch those things.
Right.
And I think that is 100%.
Right.
A fine choice.
Right. Absolutely. I think that's...
But externally, we should not as a society, and certainly not as a government or quasi-governmental entity, make those decisions for you.
Right.
We should not be saying...
Did you hear about the racist AI?
No.
Because it's kind of on the same, like, yeah.
Oh, wait, maybe I did. But
They put an AI online, and they let it into the wild on the internet.
Yep.
And
okay,
within 3 days, it was, like, a racist, bigoted, prejudiced monster.
Yep.
Microsoft?
Yeah, it was Microsoft that did that. I wasn't sure, but it was bouncing in my head, and when you said that, I'm pretty sure that's
there's
it.
There's two of them.
There's two of them?
Yeah, Microsoft literally made two of them. They both ended up being super racist and taken down.
Right.
One was Twitter-based, one was chat-based.
So I think that that's actually a psychopath. That what they did is they built emulation of a psychopath and didn't realize they were doing
because
it.
Because there's no way to do this. There's no empathy engine. There's no.
It can be done.
Humanness. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it can be done. It can be emulated.
Well, it can
but
be done
I don't know that it can
that
be done.
It can be. I think our conscience is more mechanistic than we realize. There's reason for it. I'm not just, you know, I'm not going to make it into my show, but I just, it's definitely, to me, plausible to write a conscience you know, a conscience function.
It can be done in theory, or
that would intrude on a regular basis. I think we could do it today, is to whatever degree we can write a true AI, not machine learning, not here's a test, here's a pile of bots, which bot passes the test, okay, this is the bot we're using. You know,
right.
Not that's machine learning. But when you have an AI that just, you introduce it to new kinds of situations with new kinds of stimuli, and it adapts to have meaningful responses. Maybe not the response you want, but a meaningful response for everyone.
That would be very human if it didn't have the response you want.
Right. Well, sometimes that's what's going to happen, right? You know, children throw the cereal on the floor to see if gravity works, right? They don't know.
Only children?
Yeah, well, that's, where do you think all my spills come from? Hey, does this still work? All right, yeah, okay. I'm on Earth. I'm alive. The totem hasn't fallen yet. So
wonderful.
Inception. Watch Inception if you haven't.
Oh, heck. What was the... Oh, hell. Now I can't remember the name of the movie, so never mind.
Yeah.
There's a great want-to-see-a-demonstration of gravity line in Real Genius.
Real Genius.
Real Genius.
We were just talking about Real Genius at the SciSig meeting 2 days ago, and what a great movie it was.
I love that movie.
Forget Val Kilmer.
Then again, I spent 2 summers at Caltech, so I love that movie.
Was that Caltech in that movie?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Wasn't it? You know, they didn't spin it as Caltech because it was... Caltech didn't want that, but yeah, in essence, it's Caltech.
Nice.
And I don't know that they were on, some of it what I think was actually on premise, but yeah, the concepts, the steam tunnels, the you know, geniuses off doing weird shit.
Yep.
That's Caltech to a T.
Liquid nitrogen, lasers, popcorn.
We went through it.
We actually made a list of things you could talk about without actually spoiling it. You know, just like hints about what the plot contains.
I've done LN2 bombs. You know, liquid nitrogen in a 2-liter Coke bottle, put the top back on, run away, it makes a big bang.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
You know, big bangs are what chemists are made of, you know?
Yeah.
It's a shame that there isn't more big bangs in school in chemistry, because I think we're, you know, everyone's like STEM. I'm like, well, put the bangs back in chemistry, you'll get STEM.
But it's not safe. You can't do that.
I need to be safe. I want to be happy.
One little idiot Susie in the country.
That's a child voice, just the record.
The sodium in her mouth. Therefore, we can't have sodium in the classroom anymore. Mm-hmm. Susie was an idiot. I don't care. Let's still have sodium in the classroom.
Or the thing that you don't really want to hear, it's actually even better than that, because you could say, well, what about the other Susies in the world? Da, 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 da. There's actually a better one, which is the school is negligent. They should have been there. They should have stopped it.
But the school's not always negligent.
We've
gone way too far to the side of... Anything that goes wrong must have somebody at fault.
Yeah, you know what? Now that I said that out loud. See, that's why I look at the show. Sometimes I can say it. I never promised to not never be wrong. Yeah, you're right. I could see the problem with that.
There are undeniably scenarios where institutions are negligent, individuals are negligent.
Oh, yeah.
Undeniably.
And the great thing about having a court system like ours is you can sue the crap out of them and recover monetary damages from all the money they would have earned for their entire life. That they can't earn because of this thing that happened.
But if you are fundamentally negligent and somebody, I mean, I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
But we've kind of gone over the edge somewhere of this belief that everything has somebody at fault.
Right.
Shit happens. Accidents happen.
Right.
We're too far to the side of a recoverable damage.
This is something that has to change in our society, or we're fucked. Sorry. We're just fucked if this doesn't change. I'm not even going to, like, dress it up. Which is that we have to be able to forgive more. We have to be able to forgive. And, like, you know, some things are just a mistake. Some things are just an accident. And the reason I say it, I just saw this, yesterday, somebody's high school, somebody said something untoward in high school. All right? I was a dick in high school because I was a kid. It's not that I'm a dick. It's that I was a kid.
Right.
We have the advantage of our pasts are clouded in the pre-camera world.
Yep.
There were security cameras in 7-Eleven, but they kept it for a day because it was too expensive to do anything else, and it was a grainy tape anyway. You know, nobody knows what you did unless you tell them or there's a witness and they're willing to say. You know, the kids now are not growing up in this world. They are drowning in cameras. I mean, they're just cameras, and it's just going to get worse. It's not going to go away. And so the only thing we can do is we have to normalize. This is a level of forgiveness that we never have before. you know, I'm being a pragmatist. I'm looking at it from like, right, I love that you were talking about pragmatism, and pragmatism is an American invention, and I'm super proud of it, and this is like...
I don't know about that, but yeah, okay.
No, it is. Pragmatism is a philosophy, not as a doing a pragmatic thing,
okay. But
going to pragmatism, marrying like, you know, like a Judeo-Christian religion, along with, well, what actually works, right? That's something new. That's something that we did, and partly as a result of the government, and partly as a result of the melting pot that is the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you're not pragmatic, there's no melting pot really quickly. You know, you just turn into like, you know, this giant culture war between all these little...
Right.
These little,
we have a lot more of that today than we did years ago, and technology, I think, is part of the problem there, but yeah.
Well, I think that what's happening is that these problems have always been there, it's just that they're coming to the fore now. I don't know, do you disagree with that? Or?
So speaking of the melting pot, right? So you came here in the 1800s, so you came in here in 1905, or you were part of this group, or you were part of that group, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You came here. That was it. Maybe you sent a letter or three home.
Mm-hmm.
If you were really lucky, you traveled home, or Auntie Joan came over to see you once.
Right.
Now,
and then maybe stayed if she did indeed find that the streets were paved with gold.
Right, or stayed for the summer, or you know.
Yeah.
But when you came here as an immigrant, as everybody did, unless you happen to be a Native Indian,
mm-hmm.
You came here. You were here. There was no home. Home was where I came from, but it was gone.
I have made the best bad good decision of my life.
Right.
It is the only bad good decision of my life.
You know,
I have made the one choice I get to make.
Today, you come here and you're FaceTiming to home and you're sending money back and you're flying back and forth. Are you really here? I mean, I mean, you're here physically, undeniably.
You could be actually not here at all, or you could be just as here as everybody.
Right. I mean, like Joe is here. I'm not questioning that he's physically here.
No, I get it.
But the ties back home. There's no need to immerse yourself in this world because I can stay immersed in that world.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you roll it back pre-technology, you came to America. That was it. I mean, and that was not unique to America. You went to Australia. You went to France. I don't care where you went.
It's that we
you
were
went
allowed
there, but we were the obvious
that's what was different.
Target.
We were like immigrants. Yay! Sometimes.
Well, it was us in Australia, and they're a bunch of prison colonies. So
right.
Yeah. You know everything else. So technology
is
in
why
that
I
regard,
like Australia so much. Yeah, everything's trying to kill you. It's
I have
a prison
some, right, yeah, I have
very
some,
metal.
I have some great Australian friends. I just like making fun of them. Yeah, and yet so close to New Zealand, where everything is just cheap.
Oh my God! I went to New Zealand. Yeah, so good.
Cheap anymore?
What?
Not quite cheap anymore after Christchurch.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I went to Christchurch too. Great, great place. And it's crazy that it happened there because everybody. I have a story about Christchurch. I bought a pair of boots there, and I forgot them. Actually, I forgot. No, sorry, I didn't forget the boots. I forgot my wallet.
Mm-hmm.
The store. And I went back and it was there. So I mean, it's just like you know, it was a really great people. Wait. There were kind and nice. It was friendly. It was beautiful. It really was like it is the mecca of
but you
the
know
South
what?
Island. That's probably the
what?
word to use. It is the center of the South Island.
People
go
will
there
say,
to hang out.
I mean, undeniably, yeah, it's great. I've not been there, but you know, everyone I've ever known from there is wonderful. But people will say, unlike America, where I would leave my wallet, you know, I'd step out of this room and my wallet would be gone.
Mm-hmm.
I actually don't believe that to be true.
No,
you know, there are certain places, you know, if I leave my wallet sitting on a corner of a, you know, something outside of Penn Station for an hour, I don't expect it to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, I think America is exactly that way as well. If you were to go into middle America, upstate New York, you know, outer Virginia, I don't care where you are, Northern California,
is this,
I think
are you
it's
well
exactly
traveled?
The
Have
same
you been
way.
Around?
Not overly well traveled now.
So I actually recently went on a cross country trip.
Right.
I it sounds like I'm bragging, but I didn't. We went to 30 plus states.
Okay.
It is wonderful. Sorry about that.
No, I did it on purpose.
I like that. Oh, okay.
I pulled it out on purpose.
Okay. Yeah, I like them because they're colorful.
Yep.
It is wonderful. The country is. There's a couple of spots that I wasn't in love with. But the United States of America is a super friendly place.
Yeah.
It, even if you're a New Yorker,
friendly.
You know, like you would think this, like, you know, like you go to Texas and be like, pow, 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 get out of our state. You know, no, nothing like that. It was the play. The whole country is very normal. The people you see on the internet going, rah, opening their, flipping their heads open and yelling at you, are a tiny, tiny minority. From my experience of seeing people in person.
Absolutely.
And they're just very, very visible.
I think humans in general, and certainly Americans, because they're the ones I have the most experience with, are also very reflective. In the sense of, if you go in and you're an asshole,
mm-hmm.
they're an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go in and you're nice,
mm-hmm.
that's what you get back.
Polite, patient,
yeah,
accommodating.
Everybody, you get so much, you know, our military should be the one with the stick,
mm-hmm.
but we'll be the one with honey, personally. You know, we'll go in and if you're nice to people, you get that back. If you go in and you're an ass,
mm-hmm.
what do you expect? Do you really think you're going to go in somewhere and be an asshole and they're going to be nice to you?
Yeah.
Are you nice to someone when they're an asshole to you? No, of course not. So why would, you know,
right.
put yourself in their shoes for a moment and be nice?
Yeah, well, sometimes I
am. As Patrick Swayze said in Roadhouse, be nice.
Thank you, Roadhouse, for all your wisdom.
Yes.
Yes, in the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, Roadhouse is...
Pastafarians.
Pastafarians, yes. I love the Flying Spaghetti Monster. I'm Lutheran, I'm actually Christian, but I'll never make an argument...
Okay, so...
I'll never make an argument... In like at least in the show for sure, that I can't make also make as an atheist. So I'll never make a Christian argument. I'll make a ethical or philosophical argument.
Mm-hmm.
So
how do you feel about Pastafarians having their you know being allowed to wear their colander on their head in their official government photos?
Really?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. That's spectacular. You know, and I mean, you know what? Yeah, it's nice. To actually see, I know that it's supposed to be sarcastic, but I like it because I think it's good. It helps us vet the law and work it out in a way where where religions don't have or faiths don't have the opportunity to turn into cults. Well, it has to be a religion really to be a cult. Because you have some kind of organization. You can't just have a cult without any organization whatsoever. But for a religion to turn into a cult, it actually says, okay, here's the limits. And I like that. So I think it's a really good effort. If more Pastafarians were actually doing that on purpose, trying to map out the potential for abuse of religion,
mm-hmm.
instead of, I'm not saying they shouldn't make it a funny shtick, but if there was something like that where it was like, okay, what if we were an evil religion? How could we exploit the system? Like a hacker religion, where essentially you're trying to use hack religion, but in a civics kind of way,
right.
not in a, you know... one of the actual cults kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would totally support it. I'd send the money because I think it's important that, you know, that government be able to hold a religion that's competing with the government down. You know, the key to figuring out a cult is, and the thing is, as a society, we haven't defined cult. And the key to defining cult is you can't leave it. Right? And what I mean by that is you can't exit the cult without them stopping you either monetarily or physically, or you can't exit the cult. They actively try to stop people from outside of their cult criticizing their cult, like not just you can't say that about us, like actual physical stoppage court cases,
mm-hmm.
you know, using an ultimate authority like a government to attack people.
Okay.
Yeah. So in those cases, or violence,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, so that if we just define cult, it would solve so many problems because then you could say, okay, well, this is a religion, this is a faith, this is a religion, this is a kind of on the line. Maybe you guys should tell us if you're a cult or not. We're not a cult. Okay, you're all right for now. We're going to ask you again later. You know, and that's a cult. Okay, you guys are not getting any charity. Go away. You're a problem. So.
Yeah, I like it because it's that hard. It shows that we can't bottle the definition of a religion.
Right.
You know, that we can't say, oh, Catholicism, religion. Judaism, religion. Islam, religion.
Yeah.
Pastafarians, not religion.
Yeah.
By what measure?
Why is the Pastafarians not a religion?
Why? You know, where's that measure?
They
How
totally
should
be.
That?
I love that people wrote Jedi on their census.
Nuts,
you know?
Yeah.
I love that people wrote Jedi in their census. I think that's great. And that's a good thing because it tests the bounds of the system. We should be testing the system. You know, this is, everybody has to get in it. We really want people to be geeks, which they really need to be, to make civics better. Then they have to expect them to start acting like geeks, kind of like that sarcastic Monty Python kind of, you know.
Well, yeah, at least paying attention to civics would be nice.
Right.
At least maybe being able to spell civics or at least know what the word means.
Yeah.
You know, anywhere, you know, anything.
Well, what do you think people should do? Give a thing that you think people should do. Just one thing that someone should.
Okay. Research. Don't assume that what you see on Facebook
right.
is true.
Okay.
Almost to the point of assume that.
So just go to a fact-checking site and then you're done, right?
No.
Yeah. I wasn't going to say it, but yeah. They're pretty bad.
No.
Sometimes they're right. They're not always wrong, but, you know.
Especially where you can go to the frickin' source material.
You can dig all the way down.
It doesn't take long to say, oh my God, Alabama passed this law and it does this. Okay, what's the actual law? You don't have to be a lawyer. Just read the fucking law.
Right.
And then draw your own conclusions, and they might be wrong because you're not a lawyer, but at least you've read the law.
Or make a geek friend. You know, if you read the law and you're like, I throw him in the back of the head,
right.
Make a geek friend and ask him.
If you want to rail on Trump's grab him by the pussy comment, rail away as long as you've actually watched the goddamn video.
Mm-hmm.
But if you haven't watched the video, shut your mouth.
Right.
If you've watched the video and you think he said that way, I'm fine.
So here's the problem. So if the video is the leaked portion of the video is 20 minutes long, they'll show a 5-second clip on
right.
the news.
Right.
So people have watched the video.
No,
Watch the 5-second clip.
Right. That's not the video. Yeah.
Right. So and I'm not defending what he said there, but at the same time, without the context, you can't claim to have understanding right. what was going on.
Right.
And I just, you know, and the thing that's really irresponsible. So I think part of this happened with the fairness doctrine. And I actually blame Rush Limbaugh for this. This is Rush Limbaugh's fault.
Okay.
So he was pissed that he had to tell both sides of the story. So he was part of the push to get rid of the fairness doctrine. The fairness doctrine was a FCC rule that was in place to
equal time.
To equal time for both perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it didn't even have to equal time. You just had to
conceptually
give like
equal time,
10% or 15% of the time to the other side.
Right.
When you made a case. And the idea was it was going to be an antidote for propaganda, you know, the pesky Germans. You know. So so, sorry, Germany. I'm sure most Germans are very nice now.
Poor Germany.
They really screwed it up with that one. Yeah.
Not that there's a fundamental problem with the fairness doctrine, but you're a human being with Google.
Mm-hmm.
Be your own fairness doctrine.
Right.
Go and actually look at what is the other side.
Maybe it's just time for big media to die. It's just time for TV media to die. It's time for, you know, why is so much of the spectrum? You know, this is a question for the FCC, and this is a problem I have with Trump. I don't understand why Trump hasn't done more with this. I would figure he, of all people, would understand this. You know, why hasn't the media, the airwaves, been carved up into many smaller pieces and given to given to more local stations? Why isn't half of the TV airwaves Nassau County or town stations? Because you can't corrupt that as easily. Yeah, sure, on the one hand, they're going to want to syndicate and they're going to want to get, you know, feeds from
right.
But not all of them are. And it only has to be one. You know, again, I think the solution is to go local. You know, don't let it be centralized. Don't let it be federalized.
But doing
There's
it through
economies
the airwaves.
Of scale, but I don't really care about economies of scale for my news. I don't want that. I want to hear the facts.
The internet solves that problem. The economy of the airwaves is... The airwaves are... I don't think I could get an airwave signal in my house. I mean, I know I couldn't. I have nothing with an antenna. Well, Wi-Fi antennas don't count. Mm-hmm. But I have nothing with a TV signal antenna.
Mm-hmm.
I can get that on the internet. But as an individual, I need to go look at the other side. Always be willing to go look at whatever your belief is.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other side saying? Why are they saying it? Because they're not freaking nuts.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anybody, let's take Congress. You know, there's nobody in the House or the Senate that wants America to die. You know, there are differing views on what is right.
There's a statistically insignificant portion of the Senate that wants America to die. I will not say that there's never been anyone. There probably has been. But yes, it's not enough to matter.
But certainly, I don't think there's a
very,
single...
Very, very low.
I don't think there's a single
effectively zero
congressman or senator
right
that, at a fundamental level, wishes that America would go away and we would be, you know, that America goes the way of the Soviet Union.
You know what? You know, the
nobody is in that boat.
I don't know people's intent. I can't know that, you know. But yes, you're right. It's going to be very, very low, and they have a lot of competition, and there's a lot of scrutiny, and there's a lot of eyes on them. So it's not going to be like it's going to be easy for them to operate. You know,
yeah,
have you ever watched Homeland?
Not really. Okay, a little bit, but
so
no.
The premise of Homeland is an American is turned.
Right.
And they move their way up the political ladder.
Yep.
So I'm not going to go into any more. I probably half spoiled it right there, but, you know.
Yeah, talk about, yeah, you know, spoilers but, only a month old. Homeland is fair game.
Yeah, yeah. Those characters have come and gone. So,
right.
You know. But if an American is turned, holy cow, right? You know, if they get high enough up, it can be really, really dangerous. So.
Yeah. But you have lots of checks and balances.
Right. Well, that's the thing. So, do you believe in a person, or do you believe in the system? Even if you think a person or a group of people are repugnant in the government, who cares? If you think the government works, you know, if you think the system's okay, fine. And if the system isn't okay, make a system that is okay. That's civics. That's what civics really is.
Well, yeah, I think undeniably the system is okay.
Yes.
And I hope
important.
That everyone would agree with that.
Because
I'm sure some don't.
If you really think the system's okay, there's never a reason
but
to go, ah!
You might,
and your hair's on fire. You know?
Might think that the current implementation of the system sucks.
Right.
And you're free to accept to say that.
Right, right. That it's,
but it's not that we should blow up the idea that there's a president and a judiciary. It's change the president.
Right.
You can do that every 4 years.
Right.
You know, and you can do it more often if you impeach
him. And that's what amendments are for. Go ahead. Elect, get a groundswell
right.
of public support for
well,
an idea.
And people, and this goes back to what I was saying earlier, people will say, well, it's so hard to amend the U.S. Constitution.
That stands right.
Yeah, we're not California. We don't have 876 amendments. There's a reason it's so damn hard to amend the Constitution.
Right, right.
You know, it shouldn't be a knee-jerk reaction.
Right.
You know, if it is that important, it'll happen. And if it doesn't happen, it really wasn't that important.
Hopefully getting people to get bored and just do research just because there's nothing else to do while they're waiting for the government to get around to do something. I might as well research it, right? They're not going to even look at it for 2 years, so.
2 years?
Yeah.
If it's an amendment, it might take 20.
Yeah, that's true.
Or...
Well, that would just be the public groundswell then. Who knows how long
which
the politicians
was the,
to stop arguing about
how
it.
How long did it take to ratify the amendment that congressional salaries wouldn't be changed? I mean, wasn't that amendment introduced in, like... 1790 or something, and it was ratified in 1990, something like, it was like,
yeah,
it's insane.
Yeah, yeah, it totally is.
But
it's good. That's the point, is that even though it's insane,
yeah.
We sound like we're negative on it, it's actually, it's a good thing.
No, it's a good thing. Not, America shouldn't change quickly, because it's scary as hell if something our size changes
right.
quickly.
So you don't, it sounds like you don't think that the FCC is really the problem, and then it actually. So the other problem is that people don't understand when they're doing the research how to gauge credibility. And I'll give you an example. There's actually something called the Gell-Mann amnesia effect, and the idea is that you know you're an expert in a field.
Mm-hmm.
You know all about doing. Oh my God, I forgot what it was. Oh, IRB. That's right. You know all about IRBs and that process.
Mm-hmm.
You read an article. In Newsday, sorry Newsday, I'm sure you're very good. You read an article in Newsday about IRBs, and it's just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're like, this is a mess, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you turn the page and you read about something you don't know a lot about, and you're like, oh yeah, okay, I see what they're saying.
Right.
dude, why do you trust your credibility anymore? The subject that you're a specialist in is dead wrong. So I think that part of the thing with research is multiple sources.
Yep.
You know, dive deep, and you should try to come up with a conclusion on your own.
And
at least, even if it isn't always
right, and multiple
really flushed out
opposing sources.
Trying.
Yeah, at least you're informed.
Yeah.
Multiple opposing sources. If you go to Fox News and to Rush Limbaugh and to, you know,
Hannity. Right.
Do you expect them to
Ann
say
Coulter.
Anything different?
Yeah.
You know,
it's shocking when they do.
Go see what CNN has to say on it. Go see what MSNBC has to say
right.
on it. Go see what, you know.
Then go see what 4chan has to say on it.
or look at what 4chan has to say on it.
Right. Then forget whatever you saw on 4chan.
And then
nothing to do with what you're
history.
Looking about. Mind wipe yourself. Scrub yourself with Brillo pads. Continue on your quest.
certain things cannot be unseen.
Oh, yeah. Too much information. TMI.
But, yeah, look at both sides. Because guess what? They're both right.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both wrong.
Yep.
You know, and it's totally, it's a great, great classic picture cartoon of two people facing each other, and one sees a 6 and one sees a 9. Well, yeah, because looking at it this way, it's a 6, and looking at it this way, it's a 9.
Right.
Neither one is wrong.
No, they're both wrong.
But, well, and neither one is right, you know, but you've got to be, be willing to, and it's one of the reasons in debate club, it's always about take the other, and I was not in debate club, take the other position.
Right.
You believe that abortion should be legal?
Mm.
Great. Go argue the illegal side.
Right.
You believe that it should be illegal? Cool. Go argue the legal side.
Right.
Because if you can't argue the other side, then you don't understand the issue.
Right. And it's okay to, I'll even say, it's okay to have an opinion on an issue that you don't fully understand.
Of course, you should.
But you shouldn't be furious with people when they disagree with you.
In fact, you
shouldn't even be surprised.
Right. And you should never be furious with someone because they disagree with you.
Well, this is something that's... I'm a little scared because I heard somebody joke that debate is dead. And that's a terrifying thought. But, you know, debate is critical. I mean, you can't...
More today than
learning,
ever.
It's a learning process.
Yep.
And part of the reason we need to learn so much, if anything, it's got to be the opposite. Because technology is changing so much, you know, what was true 2 years ago isn't anymore. I mean, we're getting to the point now where curriculum, the things that you need to know to work in our industry, which is like arguably the most influential industry of them all at this point,
mm-hmm.
Is changing so fast that you can't keep up any, you know, like a college curriculum, by the time they write the curriculum and you make your way through a bachelor's degree, it's stale. It doesn't mean anything anymore.
Right. Yeah. Especially in this industry, and you know what, in fairness to everything we've said, we're in this industry, so we're going to say, especially in the IT industry, and the doctor's going to say, especially in the medical industry,
mm-hmm.
and the lawyer's going to say, especially in the legal industry, but we're in IT.
Right.
Especially in the IT industry, you can't get it out of college. You can get some of the fundamentals, but what you have to learn is how to learn.
Mm-hmm.
What you have to learn is what you know today is out of date tomorrow. Deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you can't accept that, or if you think that the way you secure a system is the way you did 5 years ago, or that the way you write a web app is the way you did 5 years ago, or the way you patch systems is the way you did 5 years ago, you're nuts.
Right.
You know, and this industry changes so fast, it's continual reinvention.
Right.
And you got to be willing to do that. If you're not willing to do that, if you're going to believe that the way you read a computer program is the way you did 10 years ago,
so I think
sorry,
I think we're getting to the point now where it's even we're starting. You know, there's one of the leading candidates now, Yang, is pushing UBI, and you know the idea is that as automation becomes more advanced, we're going to get to a point where there's a labor glut. Now, you can argue about whether it's happened already, it's happening, or it's going to happen in the future, but I buy it. I really think that this is something that's unique and new. And one of the reasons I buy it is that the problem that he's trying to solve, I'm not necessarily saying right. UBI is the right solution, but maybe you think that. I don't know. We'll get into that in a second, but I just want to introduce it. You know, we have dealt with labor as a glut before, which is to say that the solution that we've come up with before is to shorten the work week. Right? So people used to work, it used to be normal to work at a factory for 80 hours a week or 70 hours a week. And now, you know, and then it was reduced down to 50 and then it was 40. And there's really no reason that we couldn't reduce it down to 30 again.
Okay.
So universal
basic income, right?
Yeah. So, and the argument is that people would just get a check. So I think that the problem is real. This is kind of like the thing with socialism and Marx's take on it. Marx's creation. The problem's real, but the solution isn't. I think that the UBI could solve it, but I think a better solution is the one we've already tested, which is a shorter work week. Do you see that in the field, that automation's coming along and taking jobs away?
Is automation, so let's take exactly what you said. Is automation coming along and taking jobs away?
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
But it's been doing that for 500 years or 1,000 years.
I personally replace people with scripts.
And we replaced horse and buggy with a car.
Yep.
And we replaced, you know, children in a warehouse, factory, that's what they call it, where they make people things.
where they make people!
That's good. Yeah, I did say that.
No, that's fun. No, I know.
Yeah, you know, with machine automation. I mean, this is nothing new.
Right.
I mean, to say that...
Of course.
And yet, this goes back to that risk, historically, America has said, oh, fine, you want to replace our farming with a tractor?
Mm-hmm.
That's okay, we'll make cars. These are the new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you want to replace our cars with some machines? We'll make airplanes, or we'll make rockets, or we'll make the internet, or we'll make... Because we're a very industrious group.
Right.
We're freaking conquered a continent. You know, it's in a few years.
Right.
Look, at the end of the day, we are not unique. The Indians can do the same thing. The Chinese can do the same thing. The Russians can do the same thing. It is human nature.
Right.
I live here.
Yeah.
I care about how we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to make any excuses for American exceptionalism. This is where I live. I want it to be exceptional. Why would you not
exceptional? Yeah, the idea that you wouldn't want it to succeed.
Yeah, it's like,
is bonkers.
Duh.
Someone would argue, oh, it isn't. It's just that, you know, blah, 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 oppression. But there's a counter-argument to that. Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, for a second I was worried that was that much two gingers. And I no, I'm good. Yeah,
this is like six fingers, dude. We're going to die.
No, I just won't go there. Are things taking away jobs? Yes.
Yeah.
But guess what? We should be able to come up with new industries, new worlds where those jobs are where those individuals are now doing this.
But clearly we should be measuring it. We need to stay on top of it. And there's a possibility.
There's never a problem with measuring anything. Why you cannot change what you don't measure. You cannot even have an informed discussion about what you don't measure.
For sure.
UBI, how do you want to define UBI? I mean, and I'm not asking you to define it, but...
Well, I'm asking you to define it.
Do we have a...
I actually have already said I don't think it's the solution.
I'm not a huge fan of it.
I think the labor glut is real.
But be careful, because, I mean,
but
UBI,
I'm not sure that UBI is the solution.
UBI, okay, yes, UBI means we all get a check for, you know, X dollars a month or X dollars a year. Well, but we kind of get that today. It's called the roads. It's called the electricity. It's called clean water. I mean, okay, so we're going to turn it into a check that I can put in my bank.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but really it's not very different from fundamental infrastructure.
So you could just argue it's going to increase liquidity. The counter-argument that I've seen seems to be that it's going to increase liquidity and that's going to create higher prices, just like a higher minimum wage will do that. You know, it's going to end up closing businesses and so forth. But
it's yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan of UBI. I am a fan, and I again, this is one of those, I hope everyone is a fan, of something that provides minimum livability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I, and now I'm not saying there should be a minimum, well, there probably should be a minimum wage, there is, but, you know, I hope we can all agree that people shouldn't be dying of starvation in our streets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so somewhere we have to do something. You know, what is that something? Look, it's always a balancing act.
Mm-hmm.
No one is against curing cancer. But there's an argument about how much we should spend because we got to get the money from somewhere.
Well,
I
can take the other side of that argument. I mean, I'm not pro-cancer. So that's a quote for the ages. I'm not pro-cancer. But on the other hand, I mean, you know, great movie in Time talks about what to do when no one's dying anymore, when no one's aging. You know, we could theoretically...
You know what?
I would not be shocked if in 2020 we cure cancer and stop aging. We're that close, where it's plausible.
I am willing to accept that today there is somebody alive that lives to be at least 150 years old, if not 200 years old.
Right.
Does that mean that everyone's doing that? No, of course not. But look at history. What was our average lifespan 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And medical technology is just improving faster and faster.
Right.
I'll solve that problem when we get there.
Okay.
Let's solve the problems we have. I don't want to not prevent people from dying just in case we have too many people. Let's solve that problem then.
Right, right. Well, for sure there has to be a today to be a tomorrow, you know.
Right.
And we definitely have problems today, and right. I'm not saying they shouldn't be solved. And yes, I think we should cure cancer. And, you know, so Linus Torvald had a great quote about this. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Good. That's called debate. That's called discussion, right?
Right. So Linus Torvald had a great quote about, I know you're from the Microsoft world, but...
He's had several great quotes, yes.
It's not all about...
one about NVIDIA, but we'll leave that alone.
All bugs are shallow with enough eyeballs, but it was the one where, you know, someone asked him about patents, you know, how do I avoid running afoul of software patents? He said, don't worry about it, just write the code. You know, they'll let you know.
Right.
When they let you know, then you do something about it.
Right.
So
yeah. I mean, it's
kind of
right.
You have to be prepared to fail. And actually, this is one of the things that as things speed up, you know, and this isn't just on a social level. This is also on a technical level too. You know, as we make more choices more quickly, there's going to be more failures, and that's why forgiveness is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because it's transparent society and there's cameras everywhere, but also because the rate of innovation is just going to fall off a cliff if everybody's sitting there like, I can't mess up. I got
to
get
with
every
this.
Little,
yeah, exactly.
Every little step is
right.
Got exactly right.
Right.
You
yeah.
know.
Well, and
if a person apologizes, they probably mean it. It's been my experience. It's hard to get people to apologize. Usually, they don't want to do that.
Right.
You know, if they say they're sorry, they're probably sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You want to at least make new mistakes. You know, learn from our mistakes and let's make new mistakes.
If you're making the same stupid mistake over and over, you're not really sorry, are you?
Well, but even learn from other people's mistakes. You know,
right.
if they did that, let me not make the same stupid mistake. I can make a new stupid mistake.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always room for
more mistakes.
Right. But also be aware of where you are in that, kind of to Linus's comment about the patents, you know, don't worry about it now, worry about it later. You look at like architecture videos coming out of Twitter or Facebook and things like that, and, you know, this is how we do this, this is how we do this. And it's great to learn from those.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, they'll be the first ones to tell you, this is how we do it today, at our scale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at Facebook scale, at Twitter scale. That's not how we did it 5 years ago, or 10 years ago, or 20 years ago. And if you're going to create a system, be aware of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But start at your scale. Do something that makes sense for your scale system.
Scratch your own itch.
Yeah, don't deploy Facebook scale
right.
when you're
one
five customers.
1 million instances.
Right, yeah, exactly. You know, almost to the point, and someone will say, well, I'll only spin up one or two instances, and I can spin up a million when I need them. The whole idea of having spinnable instances might not make sense at your scale.
Right.
why, you know, why we don't have spinnable instances, and you know, we serve a whole hell of a lot of users.
Right.
In some definitions, and a jokingly few number of users in a Facebook definition.
Right.
But I'm not going to model for half of the planet.
Right. Yeah, well, you don't always need to use induction, right? That's the bottom up approach, you know. And that's so yeah. I mean, you don't need to deal with N if you're never seen more than two, and you can't even talk about it until you get to 10. You know why? It doesn't
right.
bother. Just roll out a static, simple, you know, local case, and then you'll deal with it when it comes.
Right. And yeah.
And if you're wrong, be like, look, nobody could show me the trend where this was going to come. I mean, it's one thing if you have a trend in front of you and you can see it starting to hockey stick.
Yeah,
you're like
even
we got a year. You know, that's like
right.
okay, it's a now problem. You know, our deployment's going to be 6 months. That only gives us a 6 month error rate. We got to deploy now. But on the other hand, if you have a chart and it goes like this, you're like, eh. That could be a hockey stick or it could be flat. We don't know yet.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and everybody wants to be...
You got to wait for the knee of the curve, right?
Yeah. You know, and everybody wants to, oh, I'm going to grow. I'm going to have 50 million users. I'm going to have 100 million users.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, you got to get one first, and then two, and then four, and then eight.
Right.
And then you can, you know...
Imagine not piss them off.
Right.
Yeah.
And at the same time, manage to pay your employees, and at the same time, manage to... pay your mortgage, and at the same time, you've got so many issues to deal with before you worry about Facebook scale.
So recently, speaking of Facebook scale, mm-hmm. well, actually Twitter scale, Jack Dorsey said something about subscribing to the older ethos, the 90s ethos, that code is law, that whatever your code is, that's effectively the rules. You know, and he sees the legal system is just like something to get in line with that, to just educate them and say, look, this is how the code works. So that's how you've got to work. You know, do you see that as true, or is code law, or when is it not law?
In the sense of truly law, like in the sense of the legal system?
Yeah, well,
no, not at all.
I mean, obviously,
it's...
We can't replace every judge with a short script. That's insane. That's not what I'm suggesting.
No. But
I don't think that's what he's suggesting either.
I mean, code is clearly law
in
the computer system. I mean, the code is what it does.
Right.
I don't care what your documentation says. I don't care what your grand architecture is. I don't care what's on the whiteboard.
Mm-hmm.
The code is what the damn thing does.
Right.
So in that regard, it's law.
Mm-hmm.
But if you mean like the legal system, I think it's orthogonal to the code. I don't think there's
right
a tie-in. You know, it's they're different.
Right. Right.
You know,
so,
I don't know where Dorsey was going with that.
Yeah. But. Well, I think that he was defending the hey, it's our property. Our code works like this. Suck it up. Because the only thing we can do, like as an example, you know, they started pulling blue check marks away from people when they didn't like what they were saying, you know, on
right.
Twitter. And originally the blue check marks were just supposed to be a verification that you are who you say you are.
Right.
So, and then they turned it into a political weapon. And
right.
he was confronted about this. And it wasn't in exactly the same context, so I don't want to misrepresent it. But, you know, he's basically saying,
hey, look,
shortly that later in the conversation, he said, you know, code is law. You know, and it's
right.
like,
Well, and this is where that we go back to what we talked about before of, on one side, they are a private institution.
Right.
They can do whatever the hell they want.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other side, they're that de facto soapbox. They're that town square.
Right.
They're starting to censor in a governmental way. No, they aren't the government.
Right.
But they're starting to censor in that way.
Right.
You know, and I think
the Great Firewall of China. And, you know,
right.
running software, pattern recognition stuff to basically, and punishing people openly by humiliating them who don't fall in line socially. I mean, China's like completely on full
well,
Big Brother, and they're not even hiding it anymore.
Yeah, I mean,
so we know where the slippery slope ends.
Humiliating them is a little bit of a...
That's not real. That'll never happen. It's happening, you know, for sure.
Right, right. But humiliating them is a little bit of a different story in the sense
well,
that...
I like social pressure.
And you're on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You're on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
You're on public forums.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you surprised that something you posted on Facebook is public?
Yeah.
It's Facebook, people.
Yeah.
It's not your diary under your bed. It's
right.
Facebook.
Yeah.
you know, it's, oh, no one should have seen that. How much did you pay for that system? Nothing.
Right.
Well, then what the hell makes you think you have any claim to privacy on this system?
Maybe because it's the currency that's invested. So here's the thing that I haven't been doing. So I don't have a lot of friends on Facebook, and I don't have a lot of followers on Twitter. And actually, I'm on Gab, and I have a ton of followers on Gab, and there's different stories behind all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined Twitter back when it started, like 2009, so, and did nothing with it for 5 or 6 years.
Right.
And then I went and I actually started using it, and everything was fine for the first year, and I grew, and then all of a sudden I stopped growing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very mysterious. You know, it's like, why did I stop growing all of a sudden? You know, and I'm fairly convinced that I'm shadow banned, and there's a reason for it. So on Gab, I have about 10 times the number of followers.
Okay.
And I've been doing that for about the same time as Twitter.
Okay.
I'm posting the same thing on both.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter is orders of magnitude bigger in user base.
Right.
So, and on Facebook, I actually just was answering friend requests. I didn't mm-hmm. send friend requests
okay.
up until, that's one of the reasons my thing is so, my group is so small. And the thinking was, and the reason I didn't do Twitter at first, and the reason that I haven't really gone out and reached out to people on Facebook is because I saw my network as having value. I know a lot of people, and I'm like, why should I give them that for free? So I'm actually giving them something when I'm telling them who I'm friends with, and I'm interacting with people in public, and you can see the whole thing. Now, is that $1 million asset? No. But cumulatively, over the course of however many years you're on those things, yeah, I think those assets have value. You could even argue that even your interactions themselves are copyrighted, if you want to look at it from a legal point of view. And and if you're looking at it from an ethical point of view, that maybe that's not necessarily wrong. That, you know, you should be expected to get some kind of value whenever you interact with a system, that not only are they creating value and giving it to you, but you're creating value and giving it to them. Now, I know this is like a little dangerous, right, from looking from your perspective from software as a service, you know.
Yeah, so this acronym always scares me, but I'm going to put it up there.
Shoot. I am not a lawyer.
I am not a lawyer.
Derek, that was awesome. Field goal.
I anal.
Yeah.
But...
Well, I'm not asking from a legal point of view.
So, I mean, I would argue that, you know, kind of definitionally, your posts, don't worry about it, your posts are copyrighted. You know,
right.
Definitionally, anything you write is copyright
right.
you. You do not have to register a copyright. You do not have to, it's yours.
Right.
But at the same time,
and you signed it away with the
EULA. You put it into the public forum, right?
Right, right, right.
Doesn't make it public domain. It's
and
still they copyrighted by you.
The fact that you have to sign a EULA tells you that those companies recognize
right.
this as a real right.
Right.
And then they're like, oh crap, we better cover ourselves. And eventually
you chose to put it into a forum that you granted them a license to
right.
use it, to
right.
present it to others, to, you know. That's different from privacy. You know, it's, I don't want these people to see these things. Well, then stop putting it in a public forum, you twit. You know, it's...
Right.
Especially something like a Twitter or a, you know, I locked down my Facebook so no one... Well, then you miss the whole idea of the social network.
Right.
You know, it's...
Yeah, well, Facebook likes it when you do that because then they can use they don't care because they get the trend analysis either way. But, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I tend to think this is why I haven't really... And recently I realized that I... because my role changed, you know, being president of a user group, being a member of a, you know, being a person
right.
running a user group, you know, yeah, this is like, I worked hard for this, this is mine, you know, on the other hand, doing like a show like this, it's all about publicity and reaching people.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's completely different, it's a 180, and the most important thing is to reach people and let them know, hey, I exist.
Right.
So there's two completely different situations where, you know, one is you want to retain your value, and the mm-hmm. other one is you want to share it, but... You know, I can see the argument that when a person interacts with a software that their content is
there's kind of this
I know it's a tough
classic,
thing to answer.
Yeah, no, but there's kind of this classic argument in not so much public speaking as much as like public content or training or that kind of world of, you know, I don't want to put my videos out there because they're my content and they're what, you know, what I created and this is how I make my living, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Not me personally, but this is, you know, sort of the argument. And then there's that other side that says, no, fuck no. You want to put your best content out there because it's that marketing side of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the same thing. I think if you close off that network and you say, you know, I want to keep it down to my grandma and my mom and my two aunts and my three friends from high school, and that's my social network.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's going to remain your social network.
Mm-hmm.
But if you, on the other hand,
a lot of people operate like that.
I don't give a shit who sees this, then you might actually meet other people. You might actually be exposed to ideas that aren't yours.
Mm-hmm.
You might be exposed to, wow, that's not what Hannity or Fox or Rush says.
Right.
You know, it's actually what the other side thinks.
I like that. That's really smart.
That's a scary thought. I might actually have to justify my thoughts, or I might, you know, God forbid I decide that I'm wrong. Oh my God.
What? I'm out of here.
Yeah, I mean, how can you...
Heresy!
How can you not...
I can never be incorrect.
I mean, I don't want to be proved to be wrong.
Right. Of course
but
not.
I do want somebody to challenge my beliefs.
It's okay, I forgive you.
Thank you.
Yeah, see?
You know,
see how that works? It's really easy.
There was a line... it was a strong convictions loosely held or something like that, you know. But this is what I believe, and this is how I'm going to move forward, and this is how I operate. Oh, I was wrong?
Yeah.
Okay. This is what I believe, and this is how I'm going to move forward. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, this was what you believed, so you operate in this space. If you discover that you're wrong, you operate in this space.
Holy cow, we only have 10 minutes left. I can't believe it. I had so much more stuff to talk about.
Go for it.
All right. Well, so
speed round. It's like speed dating.
We're not gonna do that. I'm gonna choose. So it's not that bad. I'm gonna do something that's kind of fun for me, and then we can do a hard thing or we can do an easy thing. Would you rather do the easy thing or the hard thing?
I don't care.
Okay. So. Let's talk about automation. So, what do you think about automated updates, specifically? You know,
like patch updates on OSs and things like that.
Yeah,
100% in favor of them.
100% in favor.
100% in favor.
Well, that was a short conversation. All right. So,
do you
deploy to test networks and stuff to make sure that it's not going to blow stuff up? You know,
no.
To make sure the vendor doesn't.
No.
So you just you back out of patches you can on that mechanism.
Yeah.
Has it ever failed you?
Nope. Now, I will say it has failed others. And I know it's failed others.
Spectacularly 100%. Concise. You win the Technocrat Live Precision Award.
No, look, it's the same reason we'll deploy code a couple times a day sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, into a SaaS production world doing research management around the world.
Which words can blow up and be real consequences.
But guess what? If the 4 p.m. update blows up, I can roll back to the 1 p.m. update. Really wasn't that different.
So what you're saying is
if
you can't
the
be
June update
fail.
Roll, you can't be. But if the June update fails,
mm-hmm.
and I've got to roll back to the November update, holy fuck, I've rolled back a lot.
Yeah, I can't.
The more often you iterate,
your ability to understand the consequences,
the quicker you can back off.
Yeah, shrinks over time to nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
And to be honest, the users, once they get around the headache that, you know, oh my God, you can update how quick? If you're making small incremental changes, mm-hmm. they never even notice.
Right.
They just adopt the new stuff.
Right.
But when you're freaking Microsoft and you introduce the ribbon,
mm-hmm.
holy fuck, what were they thinking?
Yeah.
You know, because it's so different.
Right.
And yet if you go back and you look at the ribbon in 2007
mm-hmm.
and the ribbon in 2016, they're very different.
So what you're talking about with the ribbon.
For those of you that aren't young enough to remember when Office was good, I think it was Office 2007 that introduced what they called the ribbon bar. And they got rid of the classic normal textual menus and some icons like a diskette and a little
puddle
in it. And they put in what we now have is the ribbon. You know, you've all seen it. There's these big ass icons and you click on another menu and then there are these big ass icons. They call it ribbon bar. It was so jarring, such a change for enterprises, for industry, for everybody, that it like sucked.
What's wrong? The sound of a million secretaries crying out in pain.
And then it was silenced. So when you make those mass changes,
mm-hmm.
and it's one, I think, of many reasons that Windows 10 is now the way it is as opposed to the way the previous were, but when you make that mass change, the end users have to adopt to that mass change.
Mm-hmm.
When you deploy lots of iterative updates, it helps you on the infrastructure side. It helps you because you can deploy them over time. And by the way, we don't even deploy them to all the servers at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I can deploy them to TPWeb01. And if it starts throwing errors, well, Nginx is going to roll it back to TPWeb02. The user doesn't even freaking see the error because mm-hmm. it just retries the same request on the other web server that I haven't rolled forward yet. Because I can do this because I'm doing small incremental changes.
Mm-hmm.
So on the infrastructure side, it helps us to do rapid evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And on the user side...
Is there a learning curve with the users where you get them to understand that there's going to be several changes, you know, a change or two a day?
No, because they don't even really see it.
They don't usually
because
see it.
Because it is so small to them.
Right.
You know, oh, suddenly there's one new button.
Until the one that's really big, but then you have to apologize.
Yeah, and we've got to be careful about...
Right.
We do live updates. We haven't taken the system offline for an update in 15 years.
Nice.
You know, and
very good.
Drastically different. Whole
you have my respect,
day.
Sir. That's
we,
not easy
we
to
were,
do.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, we were a cold fusion infrastructure 15 years ago, and we're totally .NET infrastructure today.
So you made the transition
and
from cold fusion to .NET
without taking the system offline.
Microscopic changes, huh?
Yep.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, there were... Of that 15-year span, there was probably 8 years that we were running both technology stacks.
Right.
And the end users might be on a Cold Fusion page, and they'd click a link, and now they're on a .NET page, and they click another link, and now they're on a Cold Fusion page.
Right.
What do they care?
And that's a testament to organization, and it's not easy to be that organized.
We're lucky. You know, and I know that. I knock wood. We're lucky. You know,
right.
We're a small shop.
Hey, I'd rather be lucky than good.
Every day of the week.
Yeah.
I'd rather be both, but if I had to choose...
You know, once in a while, someone will surprise me and says that, you know, most people are like, yeah, that makes sense, and then once in a while, I'd rather be lucky and good.
Yeah, absolutely. I want all
I'll
the
be greedy with it.
I can get. we've been very lucky with some good partners as well.
So this kind of my choice is made for me. So this kind of leads into a last topic that I want to ask you about. Are there any workflow secrets? What makes workflow tick? Is it your physical space? Is it you know, sounds, you know, ambient music, you know, noise-canceling headphones, offices versus cubicles,
yeah,
18 meetings a week, DevOps, one meeting a week, no meetings a week, everybody
right,
works
right.
from home.
We'll kind of go through everything that we kind of do, right? So I've got, in essence, kind of two halves of the house, if you will, the devs and the support.
Mm-hmm.
Development's here in Melville with me. And they kind of are of the, you know, we'll give you what you need. You know, you're creating the lifeblood of our organization. As a software as a service company,
mm-hmm.
they're writing the software. It's kind of an important part of software as a service. And in a good way, not in a bad way, you know, every dev is a little bit of a snowflake. And I don't mean that in the millennial of a snowflake manner. But you want a standing desk and dual monitors?
Yep.
You got it. You want this gaming keyboard?
Right.
You got it. You prefer to work from noon to 10 o'clock at night?
Well, I will.
You
say,
got it.
I will say this about snowflakes, about the concept of snowflake. Everybody's journey is different. I don't like snowflakes because it implies that you're static. But the idea that everybody has a road to go on to get to a destination and it may be different than someone else's road.
There's a pejorative snowflake, and I don't like those snowflakes, certainly.
Right.
You know, everyone needs a little safe space and a kitty cat. But
right.
In the sense that everyone's journey is different.
The problem with the safe space is you're not on a journey. That's the problem with it.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Quote me on that.
So on the development side, certainly, you know.
TM. Sorry.
and you know, and so there it's have good people.
Mm-hmm.
Have a process. Have your check-ins. Have your source control. We use GitHub. We use Jenkins for automated builds. You know, have a process.
Mm-hmm.
But understand that each of your devs, you know, hire the good devs. Let them do their freaking job.
Yeah.
On the support side, it's really the same thing, but it's sort of the other side of the house. They're the service side of software as a service. They're the ones talking to our customers all the time.
Right.
And it really, again, is invest in your people. Have good people and give them the freaking tools they need. You know, oh, you fragged your headset? Okay, here's a new $500 headset. I don't care. Because what does that really cost me?
Right.
Come on. Suck it up and use that crippled headset as you talk to my customer that's paying me a lot. No, here's another headset.
Well, because when you use cheap gear and when you don't take the needs of your staff seriously, it costs you twice. Yep. Once it costs you in the actual productivity and how that's damaging what they're doing day to day.
Right.
And it costs you in the frustration from the person saying,
right,
you're being penny smart and dollar stupid, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've on both sides, the cost of that person, whether it's the developer or the support person, is astronomically higher than their special headset and their special keyboard and their adjustable desk. And I mean, I've got a standing desk now. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But those expenses that everyone goes, oh, my God, you can't have dual monitors. You can't have a PC with 16 gig of memory.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about $40 worth of memory. Who cares?
And it turns out dual monitors, people are more productive. There's actually been a couple studies.
Yeah. I mean, I there were years ago, and I hope to God none of these institutions are this way anymore. There were.
Yeah. I'm like, what is he waving about? Steve Shaw, yeah, he's got dual monitors.
Dual monitors.
Dual monitors on the Technocrat Live. Area 22.
I almost bought a third monitor for Twitter, and then I said, no, that's a little overboard.
Yeah.
It's there were places that wouldn't, you know, the develop. You can't be on the internet during the day.
Mm-hmm.
What? How can you be a developer and not be on the internet? I don't care if you're...
Oh, I'm sorry. Is it 1984 and I'm taking a test in elementary school?
I don't care if you're writing COBOL on a mainframe. You need the internet.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, your stupid developer, and he's stupid because he's working in a shop that won't let him on the internet, otherwise your stupid developer is going to try and reinvent something that he could have spent 30 seconds on Stack Overflow and copied.
More importantly, it won't work. And this is actually a good point.
Or if it does work, it only works in his use case because you haven't thought about the 37 other scenarios.
If you have a censorship in the office policy and you have competent engineers, they're not following your censorship in the office policy.
Yeah.
Because it's called an encrypted tunnel, people, you know?
Right.
And just because you think you block the VPN ports or you're monitoring the traffic, sure, maybe you can get to a point where you can confront them and say, I see an encrypted stream coming off your machine. What is that?
Yep.
But, you know, you have to ask yourself, aren't you just wasting his time at that point? You know? I mean, you really have to look at the end results. And even if this process is kooky and wacky and roundabout, you know, as long as it's not, like, depraved or illegal or undermining of the other employees of the workspace, who cares?
The one thing you do have to watch, especially when you're doing, well, really only when you're doing proprietary source, like, you know, we are, obviously, our application is proprietary to us. You do have to make sure that your developers are paying attention to licenses. And that is one of the things that we are careful about. If you're going to bring in external code, fine. Where's the license? I want a copy of it. I want it in source control next to the code.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want it. They can change it later. I don't care. I'll have a legal argument with them that at the time I took that code, here was the license that you gave me.
Right.
You know.
Oh, yeah, you have to archive.
Yeah.
Because the web page can change every minute. So this is the problem. This has been what people have argued against internet research back in the old days, back when it was, you know, less ubiquitous. You know, but yeah, I mean, it's if you don't know this for some reason and you're getting into researching things for yourself, you know, the key is take snapshots, take screenshots, you know, download data sets, download PDFs or whatever, and keep it all in a little folder. And that way, 2 years from now, when you go back to the site and it's completely different or it's gone or it says something different, you can be like, no, that's not what it said at this time.
Right.
And that's what I want to find.
And I guess I would say if there was one thing, because I still know development shops that don't do this, if there was one thing, use frickin' change control.
Yeah. You know,
obviously, today's flavor of the month is Git. And I'm a huge GitHub fan, but it can be Subversion, it can be freaking CVS, it can be RCS.
Yep.
I don't care what you use. Use change control.
Considering the scale that Linus wrote Git to deal with, unless you're enormous, you probably don't need it. But if you want it, you know.
Well, yeah, you don't have to go with pull requests and multiple upstreams and everything else.
Yeah.
But
CVS will work fine for most shops, you know.
Yeah, but I would really take a look at GitHub.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, it is... Go, because then if you're running CVS or Subversion or RCS, you need a server. You need to do all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just freaking Windows.
And then people have to adapt to their environment when they come into it too.
Right.
People come and go.
Microsoft is
and
using.
Everyone uses GitHub.
Look.
Yeah.
You can go look at the source code for .NET on Microsoft.
Yeah.
On GitHub.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And also reference
source. I'm not really a .NET user. So.
And also reference source.microsoft.com. You can go read the source code.
I know two Linux .NET people, and they sing its praises, and they say it's wonderful. But yeah. I just haven't. It hasn't been in my space.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah, definitely. I know shops that don't use source control, and it's like, are you nuts? Are you freaking insane?
Yeah, that's so 2000s, guys. That's so zeros. Yeah, time to get out of
just,
that.
Just get your developers over it, because once the developers are in it, mm-hmm. and you have, as a developer, you have that, you understand that the old code is in source control.
Mm-hmm.
So now I can delete stuff, because
mm-hmm.
it's in source control.
Mm-hmm.
I now have this freedom to make changes.
So there is one thing I will say about source control, and this is something in a lot of shops, and I know it's overblown, but it's not zero, and it's important that it's not zero, which is that there's always a risk of unintentionally uploading stuff into your repository that you wouldn't want to share with the public. And then, of course,
You don't have to have a public repo.
Right.
You don't have to have a public repo. I mean, the IRB manager source code is not a public repo.
So that does scream for the case of not going straight to GitHub, of keeping it local, you know, of having like GitLab or something on a local repo.
Yeah, GitHub Enterprise or, you know, anything.
Yeah,
or just a straight
Git repo. So
that
you can say, okay, these people downloaded it, scrub that. There's a key in there. We don't want to share that. There's a password in there. You know, it was a mistake. We made a mistake. You know, you can't forgive. You know, no harm, no foul. If there's harm, it's harder to forgive. You know.
but yeah, when that password gets checked into change control or those keys get checked into change control,
mm-hmm.
one, fine, you have an incident management plan and you're going to follow it and it says what to do. And two,
an incident management plan?
Yeah, no, right? Hard to believe. Incident response plan. And two, it shouldn't be, and for those that don't know, that's kind of the things you've thought of ahead of time to deal with in an incident. And two, you should be able to rotate those keys.
Right.
You know, it shouldn't be that bad.
Right.
Because A, your developer shouldn't have your production keys anyway, so what difference does it make?
Mm-hmm.
And B, if they do, rotate the keys. Mm-hmm. Move on. You know, it's follow the IRP, document the fact that it happened, and recover.
So I wanted to know, is there anything that we've not talked about that you wanted to bring up on the show? Any shout-outs? Any...
Love, money, sex, politics. We talked about politics. Gun rights, abortion. No, nothing.
I don't think we talked about gun rights.
No, we didn't. That's okay.
3D printed guns are everywhere. Beware.
I have copies of the original Liberator.
Really?
Nice. Yep.
Oh, you know the name. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I downloaded it before they took them offline the first time.
They're not going away. They're not going away. They're everywhere now.
It's the modern version of the Anarchist Cookbook.
Yep. Yeah. Dead bang on. Thank you so much for being on.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
It was really awesome.
Thanks,
everybody. Good night. And next week we're off. There'll be some replays. And after that, we're back on. So see you in a couple Thursdays.
Thank you very much for having me. It was great.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks so much.
No problem. Thank you.
No, thank you.
No,
thank you.
Fine. Thank me.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.